Hi, everybody. It's episode 339 of PodQuest.
Yay!
It's Wednesday, February 17th, 2021. I am Chris. With me is Richie.
Hi, I'm here.
And
so is Chase.
His barking dog.
Yeah.
It's all right. Mine do that sometimes, too.
He barks for no reason anymore.
I mean, that's dogs. They, in their head, they have a reason.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Ugh. I feel like it's so much later than it actually is today.
I feel you on that. Because, like, I've been, like, doing stuff at 5 o'clock, and it's still daylight out. But, like, today, because I didn't leave my house, because I was just... I went from watching one computer screen for work to watching another computer screen for the direct that, like, I didn't move out of my seat until it was nighttime, and now I just feel like it's midnight.
Oh, that's a bummer. Now, I've moved around a whole bunch today. Just feels like a much later... I don't know, it just feels much later.
Yeah, I feel you.
Yeah. So there was some news this week, so I guess we'll talk about some news.
There's a decent amount of news.
Yeah, some of it's actually a little older, because I meant to put it on last week, and just it slipped my mind.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing, I know you don't want to hear about this, some CD Projekt Red stuff happened. I don't know if you saw any of this at all, actually. Last week, I believe it was, they got ransomwared.
Yeah, I've heard about this. And it's not that I don't want to hear about it, I just don't really care about Cyberpunk. But
You had said a few weeks ago that you didn't want to hear anything else about Cyberpunk.
Well, yeah, I mean, Cyberpunk, not CD Projekt Red. Like, this is shitty what's happening with CD Projekt Red. Like,
yeah.
This is shitty what people are doing.
Yeah, so they got hit with ransomware. It looks like it was February 9th, so I believe that was last Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
They released like a statement right afterwards, basically that they were not going to be negotiating with the people that did it. They're not sure how it happened. They're investigating it. They've contacted like the government that's in like the government agencies responsible for that sort of stuff, as well as like an IT forensic company to help them try and get things cleared up.
Yeah.
One of the things that was kind of getting to me about this whole thing, a lot of people online were having the hot take that this was fake because of the note that is left on the computer. So I don't know how much you know about ransomware. Generally, when it happens, it encrypts all of your files, but they usually leave text files in every folder that has something encrypted.
Yeah.
And it's usually named something like readme or gotya or like something shitty. And it has instructions. Well, it has what happened to you, as well as instructions on how to contact the people that did it to pay them off to get the decryption key.
Yeah.
So a lot of people were claiming this was fake because of how badly formatted, spelled, grammar, all that stuff the note was. Being in IT, I've seen a bunch of these. This is exactly how these things look. They are always bullshit. The people that write them have no idea how to do anything except for make the ransomware.
Yeah, like, I feel like what I'm gonna say might come off as kind of rude or slightly insensitive, but most likely the people who are writing this and writing these notes are English as a second language speakers. Like,
no, in a lot of cases they are from outside the U.S. because there are a lot of countries where this stuff is much more of a gray area as far as like the legal system is concerned. Like, it's illegal, but they just don't have any, like, strict laws, like, that would get them necessarily in a lot of trouble. That's why a lot of them also don't look for large sums of money. Because a lot of countries have, like, a cutoff. It's like, if you don't take more than $20,000, we can't try you.
Yeah, which, that's bonkers.
Yeah.
But, like, it's, the reason it's poorly written is because somebody, like, either wrote it in their language and then Google translated it, or just wrote it the way their language would have written it in English.
Yeah, exactly. And in a lot of cases, not in a lot of cases. So a lot of what I was seeing were people going like, well, if they're smart enough to write this encryption stuff and get access to it, I'm sure they're smart enough to write a more legible letter. And like you just said, like English isn't their first language. Like, this is how those things are worded.
And also, like, writing the software is a different language than English. I'm smart enough, kind of, to speak English, but I'm not smart enough to speak American Sign Language. Like, they're two different languages. I can't write this code, but I can speak English and write English. Like, they're two languages.
Yeah, no,
it's
exactly.
Different. It's totally different.
So just so everyone is on the same page here, the notepad that was left, at least what they showed, what CD Projekt showed, it said, "Hello, CD Projekt. You have been epically pwned. We have dumped full copies of the source codes from your Perforce server in Cyberpunk 2077, Witcher 3, Gwent, and the unreleased version of Witcher 3. We have also dumped all of your documents relating to accounting, administration, legal, HR, investor relations, and more. Also, we have encrypted all of your servers, but we understand that you can most likely recover from backup. If we will not come to an agreement, then your source code will be sold or leaked online, and your documents will be sent to our contacts in gaming journalism. Your public image will go down the shitter even more than people will see how you shitty your company functions." Yeah, no, that's I read that as it's written.
Yeah,
"Investors will lose trust in your company, and the stock will dive even lower. You have 48 hours to contact us." And then odds are below this was, like, the method of contact that they wanted them to use.
Yeah.
But, like, that's right on par with a lot of these ransomware things.
Yeah.
And, I mean, honestly, like, not that... So, this is not obviously all CJ Project's fault, but, like, if they were able to get hit with a ransomware that got access to all of the source code for games and also to their accounting, admin, legal, HR, and all that stuff, that means their network is set up like fucking shit.
Yeah.
And they did this to themselves in a way. Because generally, the way that a lot of that ransomware stuff works, like, people very rarely, like, it's not like in TV where somebody, like, hacks into a server and suddenly has access to somebody's server. Somebody has to give that access. It's usually unintended, with malware. Like,
yeah,
they'll send an email with an attachment that some unknowing person will save, or they'll send a phishing email with a link that they'll click that will then download something. Like, that's how people get this stuff. It's not like it's not the movies and TV where, like, these guys just were on the servers just doing all sorts of fun stuff because they found a backdoor into it.
Yeah, it's not like Swordfish where you have to make a cube-based coding system to create the worm so that you can go in. No, it's not that. Like, it's...
Yeah, like, they can't get access to the server unless somebody tells them basically where the server is. Like, there's not a way for them to just know what all the IP addresses are of the stuff to get access to them.
Yeah.
I mean, you can guess, but if their network's set up correctly, it's not a 192.168.1 network, I would fucking hope.
I mean, you would hope, but...
But yeah, like, we just had a client that back in... Well, they weren't a client when they got hit with it. They're a client now. That got hit with ransomware back in the spring, and their network was set up like shit because the guy that was in charge of their IT was 102 and didn't keep up with anything. And didn't secure anything, and their entire infrastructure got encrypted, and they had no backups.
Yeah.
Well, they had some limited backups, but not much. Mm-hmm. So, like, they ended up having to pay to decrypt things, and then hope that the people that encrypted it were above board enough to actually give them a real decryption key.
Yeah.
Because, like, that's the thing, like, not all of these people actually give you real decryption keys. They get the money, and then they disappear. They'll give you a fake decryption key, if anything.
That sounds about right. If you're going to do something shady like this, you're going to be even more shady and not actually give back.
Well, so the big one from a few years ago, like the first really big one, I believe it was WannaCry, because it made you WannaCry. Theirs was as above board as something shitty like that could be. They basically had, like, a call center wherever they were with a bunch of people available to answer the phone and help you decrypt your files once you showed them, like, proof of payment.
Wow.
Yeah. Most of them don't do that.
No, not at all.
But so since this all happened last week, it's now being reported that the stolen data has been sold on some sort of dark web auction.
Mm-hmm. I did read that as well.
Yeah, so it's... Nothing's confirmed by anybody. But it looks like, where did the price go in here? Looks like it may have been upwards of $7 million for all of that data.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's a threat intelligence analyst at Kella, which Kella is something important. I just don't remember what. Kella is like some sort of digital, it's a dark web monitoring organization, according to this IGN article.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they're real, and, like, they monitor this stuff, and yeah. So all of the, all of CD Projekt's stuff may have been sold for a large amount of money.
Yeah.
Which,
I mean, I'm not surprised if it's, if this is all true, which I wouldn't believe them to do something like this and be like, oh, this is all fake, or be a publicity stunt or anything. I wouldn't be surprised if it already sold, because yeah, they're not gonna contact them or try to decrypt within 2 days. It's obvious. Like, they're not gonna spend that money.
Yeah, and they flat out said they were not going to do that, and that they were working with all their employees to make sure that, like, they updated any information that they needed to, and
yeah.
They made a statement for their ex-employees. They made it on Twitter. I hope that they reached out to people that had worked there recently enough that they still had contact information for them. But, like, their tweet basically said it, like, send us an email so that we can help you.
Yeah.
Like, here's the email address. Email it. Let us help.
It's just, like, it's ridiculous, because, you know, this was targeted. It was targeted at them. It wasn't, like, it most likely wasn't something where, like, somebody was just sending out phishing emails to get this. It was straight up, they were targeting CD Projekt Red, and to get back at them for Cyberpunk, and for the crappy release that Cyberpunk had.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Like, now you're making things even harder, and the game is going to have an even longer post-release timeline, if it ever gets released again, because of what you just did. And so, yeah, you're mad at them, so you're gonna do this, but you're now fucking everyone else over even more. And not just the people wanting to play the game, but the company itself. And now you may never actually get the game. Like, it's just, it's bullshit.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with you. Honestly, like, people that do ransomware are just scumbags anyway.
Yeah.
And, like, you notice, they never go for, or at least they never hit the companies that really, like, that suck. That, like, frankly, like, suck as much as they do, like Comcast. Like, not that I would want, like, employee data to be breached at Comcast, but, like, if their file server just got encrypted and they had to pay $1 million to decrypt it, fucking good. Everyone, like, at the executive level at Comcast sucks.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's always, like, smaller organizations that definitely just don't have the infrastructure to, like, be prepared for every possible scenario.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, that really sucks. Hopefully, like, they can get everything kind of, like, back up and running quickly enough. Cause like the ransomware people said, like, they will hopefully have backups of everything and can at least undo the actual encryption process.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully their backups are recent. Like, hopefully they make, you know, regular backups of everything, like nightly backups of all their servers and everything, and all of their users back up to either a server or, like, a OneDrive or something like that.
Yeah.
And then hopefully after that, they do some cybersecurity training, because they apparently fucking need it.
Oh, yeah, they definitely need that. They definitely, definitely need that.
Next up is another little bit of a dour one. EA, apparently it was last week, but this was another one that I missed. They're going to be deciding the future of Anthem. Remember Anthem?
Well, yeah, the servers recently went offline. Within the past 2 weeks, I think. So, like, I'm not surprised that at this point they're going to be deciding the future of it, like, shortly. To, like, decide if they do want to actually try to make it work or not.
Yeah, I'm actually just double-checking that nothing major has come out since the initial news kind of broke. So Jason Schreier over at Bloomberg reported that EA was going to be holding some sort of board meeting or some sort of, like, high level meeting during the week of February 8th, so last week, to determine the future of the game. He later remarked that he thought it was going to take him a little while longer than just that meeting to really decide, like, what would happen. The report, though, is that EA is going to examine the current state of Anthem Next, which is, like, the name that it was given, kind of the way, like, No Man's Sky or Final Fantasy 14 kind of got, like, a rebranding after
Final Fantasy 14 was originally just Final Fantasy 14, and then the version that actually worked was called A Realm Reborn.
Yeah, and so. I know No Man's Sky had a similar sort of, like, side branding to go along with, like, its update after its initial launch.
Well, yeah, I mean, every time they release an update, they add, like, a different new, like, branding.
That's true. But you remember want to talk about, like, the
yeah.
first big one that kind of set them back on trajectory?
Yeah, I don't remember what it was, but I do.
Neither do I. but yeah, so Anthem Next, they're going to be looking at the current state of that to make the call whether they're just going to scrap it entirely or continue letting mm-hmm. the team try and fix it and bring it back out to the masses.
Yeah, which I'm not surprised. I feel like that game had enough pull and had enough intrigue that, like, people would want it to continue. And so if they can and if it's reasonable to continue it, they should. But if, again, if there's, I mean, there's probably still maybe a small player base of it, not that big at all. But, like, I mean, I'd be interested in like, a better version of Anthem. Like, I didn't get this one. I liked what I played in the demo, but I'm glad I didn't get it because it was just not good. Like, the gameplay loop was not good. If they can do better with a different version or an updated version, I'm all down for it.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, I thought the concept was fun. I thought I thought it was an interesting concept. And I thought that the gameplay had promise.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't necessarily fun, but it wasn't bad either.
Yeah.
Like, it just needed some tweaking.
Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah, I guess EA is going to EA. They're going to decide and probably... I mean, it's not like it would be super uncommon for EA to can things that are in development. Like,
yeah.
They did it to most of their Star Wars games.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, there was that... I mean, yeah, I'm not even going to try to mention them all because, yeah, there was a ton of them.
Well, I mean, they closed two studios that were working on Star Wars games.
Yeah.
So, there's that. But yeah, I'm curious to see if we actually get anywhere with Anthem. But
yeah,
we'll probably know soon. In the next couple of weeks, I imagine they'll make some sort of announcement.
Yeah, we'll see.
But you, in particular, finished Manhunter this week.
Try that again.
You finished... Oh, Maneater. Sorry.
Yes. I beat Maneater, which it was a free PS Plus game for PlayStation 5 in, like, I think it was January. Maybe it was December. I can't fully remember.
I'm pretty sure it was January.
Yeah. And that game is great. Like, it's so simple, and it's, like, it's not hard, but there is a challenge aspect to it. But, like, the further you get in and the higher your levels, you cap out at level 30.
Okay.
But the hardest enemy you can fight is level 55. It ends up being a sperm whale, a bounty sperm whale. But, like, it's just... The way they tell the story, where it's like a documentary-based thing, is really cool. The upgrades and changing your shark out, loadout, basically. By the end, like, I'd platinumed the game, so I had everything. All possible upgrades, all possible mutations. I had everything. And I tended to lean more toward just swimming around with everything rock, except for... the body? Except for the teeth. It was most of the body, I think it was like body, fins, and head were rock, tail was lightning, and teeth were shadow, which was basically poison. But the shadow teeth, you recover health every time you chomp on something. So it's like vampiric, which is why I use those the most. And so, like, once you get your loadout that you like playing with, the game gets, like, just really fun and stupid. There's so many different Easter eggs. As you're playing through and going through the maps, there's, like, what do they call it? Like, locations to discover that like, are just, like, stupid random things in the water or even outside the water that you have to break the signs. It's one of the collectibles. And there's a few of them that, like, there's a game called The Killing Floor. You find all the heads from that game's title card made from stone. Like, it's basically the Mount Rushmore of killing floor. There's an homage to just kaiju in general, but mostly to Pacific Rim. You swim down under, and there's a big chained in door with yellow coming out, and it's like the kaiju door, like Pacific Rim. There was a pineapple house under the sea. And then my favorite, I don't know if you're going to get this one, but I'm going to just explain it. Like, the location is called Out of Toilet Paper, and it is three shells.
Oh, Demolition Man.
Yes. when I got to that and I read, like, I hit that one and it, like, explains, like, sometime in the near future, we're going to learn how to use 3 shells instead of using toilet paper and wasting all that, those trees or something. Like, it was really stupid, but really hilarious, and I loved it.
Yeah, I did play a little bit more of it. I became a teen and I got to, like, the second grotto.
Yeah.
And then, like, I don't know, at that point, it just wasn't really, like, clicking with me anymore. Like,
yeah,
there was a challenge there that wasn't a fun challenge for me. Like trying to swim around and avoid the higher level things that you could not take on.
Yeah, I understand that. But, and, like, early on, there is that challenge. But once you reach, like, level 15, so once you reach adulthood and beyond, that challenge doesn't really sit there.
No, I understand that, but, like, I got to level 6, and that just felt like a slog, because it was a lot of just eating small fish and avoiding alligators.
Yeah, and yes, 100% yes, totally agree. Once you start eating humans, you level up so much faster.
Oh, I ate a bunch of humans, too, because I did I tried to do one mission, but there weren't enough that I could get to without dying, because I had to go too far up on land.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to get my like wanted level up or whatever, but I couldn't get it past 1 at the point because there just weren't enough humans around.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, like, it's fun, like, it's neat. It like, I like the humor and all. It just,
yeah.
Yeah, that,
so,
like
for instance, to get your notoriety level up, though, you need to eat enough humans to turn red so that the hunters come after you, and then kill enough of the hunters for that bar to fill up to go to 2.
Yeah, and, like, I managed to get the hunters to show up once, and I cleared them out for the most part.
Yeah.
But then just too many. Like, I killed one of, like, the named hunters, like, the first one.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
then there were just too many of them to deal with. Because that, yeah, as the teen shark, your health just doesn't go very far.
Yeah, yeah.
And, yeah, like, after that, it was like, okay, well, all of my other tasks involve going places with things that are significantly higher level than I am that I cannot fight.
Yes, and yeah, there's like a little bit of a grindy aspect, but like, as you're swimming around, you're grabbing the smaller fish anyway. Like, you should just be constantly eating when you're playing that game, because that's what sharks do anyway. They, like, don't have a stomach. They just eat everything.
I don't know that that's true. Is that true?
I think so. Like, they eat everything. Like, if a shark is swimming, they're swimming to eat.
I mean, a shark always swims, though.
Exactly. But, like, yeah, it's, I understand that, like, getting to level 10 was rough, but getting beyond level 15, was simple. And once you reach 20, which is elder status, you then have to progress throughout the story before you can actually become an elder shark. I was level 24 before I became an elder shark, because that's how easy, just once you get to a certain point, and once you have, like, the upgrades, once you have the shadow teeth, the game becomes so much easier. And just upgrading the shadow teeth to all the way, it brings up your health so high, and it recovers, every bite recovers 50 health every time you bite something.
Huh. Yeah, there are a lot of other games on both platforms that, yeah, I would rather play than that. So it was one of those, it's like, I went back to it, I played a little, like I said, I got to teen, and I'm just like, yeah, I'm not really having any fun with this, so I'm gonna put this away. I did enjoy that Chris Parnell is definitely the narrator.
I don't think I know who that is.
You would know him if you saw him. He has been in a whole lot of stuff.
Okay. But yeah, like, it's definitely not a game for everyone, and the controls are a little rough to get used to. You also don't even have the tail swipe yet.
No, I don't. The only attack I have is the lunge.
Yeah. Which that's also, like, it is slow because you don't get the tail swipe, but once you get the tail swipe and start using that, and then have, like, it literally, like, the game gets so much better the further you get into it. Like,
yeah, no, I'm sure it does. And like I said, like, it was fun enough to play for, like, 2 hours.
Yeah.
But beyond that, it didn't have enough of, like, a catch for me.
Yeah, and, like, I'm sure if you ever, you could go back to it in a couple of weeks, or, like, if you have an hour to kill just to do a couple of quick missions or whatever, just jump right into it, eat a little bit, and once you can easily, the game is, like, 10 hours long, 10 to 12 hours long. It's not long at all. That, like, putting an hour every couple of days into it, Like, you could still get your... I mean, it was free, so you get your money's worth of it just by playing it. But, like, it was... To me, it was so fun, and the humor was, like, really great. The locations are pretty cool as well.
It has some charm to it, and I think that there are plenty of people out there that would really enjoy it, that should play it. I don't know that I'm ever going to go back to it.
I'm hoping they do, like, some sort of, like, DLC or something, because that's the one thing I wasn't too happy with, was that, like, I thought I'd be able to be different kinds of sharks with my mutations, but no, you're just a bull shark with different kinds of, like I said, I used the bone skin. So, like, I looked like a bull shark, but I had, like, bones protruding out of my body and stuff that gave me more defense.
Okay.
Or like, I was the bioelectric tail. So I had, like, bioelectricity, around my tail, and whenever I would do my tail attack, it would shoot a slash of electricity at the enemies, and if I hit them enough, they would be paralyzed or stunned. Or, like, if I used the shadow tail, it'd be darker, and I was throwing basically poison at the enemy.
Yeah, I don't know that. So that game came out almost a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure if it would get any DLC at this point.
I feel like they might be working on DLC, but I think they're also a smaller company. Actually, no, because I think it's the team, the company that did do Killing Floor and stuff.
I can tell you in just a second. Tripwire Interactive. Yeah, they did do Killing Floor.
Yeah, so
Killing Floor, like, Killing Floor 2, a couple other games I've never really heard of, and this.
Yeah, so, like, I mean, I don't know what they're working on since May 22nd of 2020 when this came out, but it is definitely a fun game, and it's if you had the PS5 when it was free, it's worth that, or it's probably worth the purchase on any other service. If you're just looking for a dumb, stupid, fun, weird RPG, that's definitely a game for you.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds about right for it.
Yeah.
So this next one's a little odd. I don't know if you know anything about this. The game 6 Days in Fallujah has been uncancelled after over a decade.
I have no idea what this is.
So the Battle of Fallujah was from the Iraqi War in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
So this game is set during 6 particular days in what is called the Second Battle of Fallujah, which happened between November 7th, 2004 and December 23rd, 2004.
Okay.
It was U.S. and I want to say U.K. and some of the Iraqi soldiers trying to retake this city from Al-Qaeda and insurgents and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
It was originally in development and announced in 2009, which wasn't even 5 years after the actual battle happened. And it kind of got quietly canceled.
Mm-hmm.
So the game was originally... sorry, my notes are kind of all over the place for this because the way the article I read was written. The game was originally in development by Atomic Games, which has since closed after this game was canceled. And it was originally going to be published by Konami, but they pulled out after the game started receiving heavy criticism from veterans and anti-war groups because of its setting in the real world with modern battles and all that stuff. Because apparently, World War II and Vietnam and stuff like that, totally fine to make video games with.
I mean, I think it's not as much those games are fine. I think it's only fine for, like, World War II and everything because it's not specific enough. Whereas this, the way it seems with how accurate they were trying to get, it's a little too specific.
So that all that accuracy stuff is based, that's in the notes, is based on the version that's now in development again.
Okay.
I don't know how accurate they're trying to be in 2009. And frankly, like, it was 2009. Like, technology wasn't where it's at now.
No.
But yeah, so right now the game is set to be released on PC and consoles later this year. They started redeveloping it apparently in 2016 and it only just now got announced. It's Highwire Games, which is, it was founded by Halo's former lead designer.
Okay.
So they're trying to be accurate as they can be. The campaign depicts 6 days of a conflict, as experienced by U.S. Marines as they attempted to recapture Fallujah from Al-Qaeda. So. Yeah, that's what I was saying before. Reports say that the team interviewed 100 Marines, soldiers, Iraqi civilians, and such to ensure as much authenticity as they could. And Highwire is saying that they've developed unique technologies and mechanics to replicate the uncertainty and tactics of modern combat in a way other games do not.
So maybe I'm going to go opposite. Maybe the reason they canceled it is because they were trying to go too off the cuff and not accurate enough and just trying to cash in on something like that.
I mean, it's possible.
But it's also, it was a game that was being developed 5 years, give or take, after the event happened. So, like, that's kind of a little too soon, in my opinion.
I mean, it definitely seems too soon, but also, like, movie, like, so for what it's worth, there were, what, 4 different movies based in and around, like, the Iraqi war and, like, the 5 or so years after it that have come out in the last decade? Because you had, like, Zero Dark Thirty and American Sniper, and I know there were a few other ones. I think, like, The Hurt Locker was based around some of that stuff. And, like, so cinema's fine. Like, you can go sit in a movie theater and watch this stuff. You just can't have it interactive.
Yeah, yeah. It's a weird, like, middle ground kind of thing. Like, it's, I don't know. Like, to me, 5 years after is a little too soon. You're just cashing in. It's a money grab. But at this point, the way it seems like they're doing it and trying to bring the authenticity and realism to it, they're actually trying to bring, like, the scenario to light and, like, actually make it shine and not just be like, oh, well, we're going to make a first-person shooter based off. Like, I don't know. It's interesting, though. Like,
yeah, I'm curious to see what it ends up being.
Yeah, like, I honestly don't even remember. Like, I don't remember the Battle of Fallujah. I was, let's see, 2004. I was junior? No, sophomore in high school. Or maybe I was a freshman.
So this would have been, you would have been a sophomore.
I would have been a sophomore. So I was a sophomore in high school. I didn't have any current events classes, so we didn't really study that. And I think with Collingswood, I still had World History 2. Or no, U.S. History, I think. Or it might have been U.S. History 1. I don't remember. That was so long ago.
Over a decade.
Yeah.
15 years ago, actually.
But, like, when the game was originally announced, I had just got out of high school 2 years prior. Like, I was in college. Like, I don't, yeah, that's just, I don't remember any of this. I don't remember it ever being announced. I don't remember, I mean, I wasn't as in touch with games media as I was then, and even as I am now, and, like, even now, I'm not really as in touch with games media as maybe I should be.
Yeah, you're kind of not involved with it at all.
I'm not saying I'm not, like, in touch and involved are two different things, okay?
Debatable. But yeah, it's, so I do remember this game, like, vaguely. Like, I remember the name more than anything. Like, I remember hearing that name, not really knowing what it was, and then just never hear. And it was honestly one of those things where, like, when I started seeing these headlines last week, I guess it was, like, I was very confused. I'm like, I remember that game. I thought that game came out. It was just bad. Mm-hmm. But, like, apparently it actually just never came out.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I guess we will find out what it is later this year, apparently, like, yeah. Unless, I mean, it gets delayed.
It has piqued my interest. I am interested in it, but probably won't. I don't know if I'll get it. Probably won't.
Yeah, no, you probably won't. So you started Resident Evil 7.
Yeah, so
only during the day, right?
I only played about 2 to 3 hours, not even. I got through the garage fight scene.
Okay.
So that's not long at all, I don't think.
No, I got that far, and I did not get super far in that game.
Yeah, but just quick backstory on my Sunday when I went to go play it, and my week, essentially, from that. I was having maybe some weird allergy issue or something with my eyes, and so they just started watering and kept watering, and then eventually, from constant rubbing, I got something up in my eye. So after about 2 to 3 hours of playing Resident Evil 7, I had to stop because I could not play because of what was going on with my eye. That's the only reason why I'm only that far in the game. And then I actually couldn't, I couldn't play on Monday because of my eye issues further, as well as I ended up having work on Monday, which I thought I had off because it's a bank holiday.
Whoops.
I work for a bank that says I'm off on all bank holidays. Apparently not that one.
I was off.
Exactly. I work, like, it made no sense for me to be working, because also, yesterday, we get an email, oh yeah, this report didn't get pulled because the people that do that work weren't in the day before because it was a bank holiday and the banks are closed. So, the report didn't get pulled, so we don't have any work. So we sat around with no work most of Tuesday, just doing busy work. It was a waste. But anyway, yeah, I jumped into Resident Evil 7. I made it through the garage fight. The game is good, but I don't really know how I feel about it. And I don't know if that makes sense.
It does not.
Like, it might be because it's new and different. It's not what I'm used to with Resident Evil. Like, I'm used to the third person and tanky controls. But, I mean, this game's kind of tanky, but, like, because it's first person, and he's not, like, a hero. He's just a guy. But, like, there's so many red flags that I don't understand why he's even in this scenario.
He wants to find his wife.
It's his girlfriend. Not his wife. It's his girlfriend who's been missing for 3 years.
Yeah, it's fine.
Let's start that off right there. His girlfriend's been missing for 3 years.
But, okay, like, didn't, like, I forget exactly the setup. Didn't he get, like, a letter or something weird from her, like, recently?
So, he got a message from her saying, do not come here. And then, 3 years later, got an email from her saying, you can come here. So, first of all, if your girlfriend goes missing and potentially is being killed, because I don't remember if he got that video email of her, like, saying, don't come here, but she looked wrecked and terrible. Like she was going to die. If you get an email from your girlfriend saying, don't come here, and then 3 years later, you get an email saying, I'm ready for you to come here, here's the address, you don't fucking go there. You send the cops. Like,
that's true.
So that's red flag number one. Red flag number two, the location he's being sent to is off, like, it's off a dirt road that you can't even drive all the way up to. And the first thing you see is this gated area that when you go press the button, it doesn't work and it's all flooded. And you turn and there's an old news van like TV production van off to the side that, like, you can investigate it. And you have to crouch under another gate. So now you're breaking and entering. And you walk a little, no, you don't actually have to crouch under a gate. There's just an open gate. But you walk through that gate and you look to the right and there's a bunch of crows eating a dead animal of sorts, large dead animal. And then you look to the left and you have to crawl under an effigy of a bunch of dead animal parts, like, placed in a way to deter people. At that point in time, you call the cops. Like, that's, like, right then and there. I'm sitting there, I'm like, why is this guy who is a no one doing it? It's, number one, it's your girlfriend who's been missing for 3 years. Yeah, people don't move on that fast. Sometimes, some people don't move on that fast, depends, but, like, I don't know.
It's true love.
I don't know. Your girlfriend of three
just,
years.
Nobody loves you, so you just don't get it.
Maybe. but, like, that's not even, like, it's more the, like, you don't get, I don't know, I'm trying to express this in the best way I know how without complaining about the mechanics of the game, but, like, I understand they're trying to bring the sense of horror and everything to you, but, you don't get any sort of weapons until after you lost your frickin' arm, and that's a gun that, like, this random guy knows how to shoot perfectly fine.
We don't know what his backstory is.
When he's missing an arm, and then, like, you go...
Wait, doesn't he get his arm back when you get the gun? Or is that after that?
You get the gun when you're running away from her and she's chasing you with a frickin' chainsaw.
Right.
Or no, she chops off your arm with the hatchet, and then you chop her neck, and she, like, then disappears. And you get the phone call to, like, all right, there's a way out in the attic. And so you're holding your arm, and you find a gun that you then have to reload multiple times to fight this enemy because she comes out with a frickin' chainsaw and he's reloading this gun with one hand. I was like, this is weird, but okay, sure. So then
it's adrenaline, then, man. You do what you gotta do in the heat of the moment.
How are you reloading when you're missing half an arm?
Yeah, fucking hold it in the crook of your arm that's missing half of it.
It's just, It doesn't work.
Because, yes, it does.
He's holding it with his good arm, and he's reloading with his bad arm. But like, how does he even get the
okay,
the
I mean, clip? that is just poor animation. But like, how really, like, all he'd have to do is hold the gun under his arm, eject the clip with his hand, put the new one in, and then pull it back out from under his arm.
Yeah, no, he ejects the clip, which, again, this guy who is a nobody, seemingly at this point, knows how to easily eject a clip and then put a new clip in and shoot this gun with pristine accuracy.
Have you ever shot a gun before?
No.
A handgun in particular, like with like a clip, not real complicated. There's literally like a button on the side to drop the clip out. You just slide the new clip in, and then it's, you know, you point, you shoot, you pull the trigger.
But it's more the point I'm trying to get at of how accurate he is with this gun, missing an arm.
Well, you figure he's only as accurate as you are. So maybe it's you that's being too good. Maybe you should miss a little more.
But like, so then like it goes through that whole sequence. You wake up in the mansion, and like my problem at this point is you need to activate the chase sequence with the father in order to get the key, in order to get to the save room. And like, when you try to open at least my instances that I tried to open the hatch to get down to get to the save room the first time, like, I open it up and it opens up the menu. The entire game still stays active while you're opening up the menu to get to the key. But it doesn't load up with the cursor on the key. So then you had to move to the key. And during that time, I'm getting attacked by the father, and I don't have any way of defending myself. And like, I get the sense of urgency and horror, but it's just like, I don't know. This is just so much different that like, it's mechanically, it's good, but I still just don't know how I feel about it. And I need to get further into it. I'm going to continue playing it, but as like a Resident Evil game, I don't know how I feel about it.
Well, that's the thing. It is so far removed from all of the other Resident Evil games. It doesn't feel anything like them. Like, it's more like a Final Fantasy to Final Fantasy than a Resident Evil to Resident Evil.
But Chris is in it.
Is he?
I mean, he's in the DLC.
But, so that's the thing. I think he's only in the DLC.
And he's in the sequel. He's in Resident Evil 8.
Yeah, I mean, he's in the sequel, but I'm pretty sure he's only in the DLC of the base 7.
But, you haven't really played too far into it. I'm only a couple hours in, not even. Like, it's not too long of a game, but right now, like, I even had this feeling when playing the demo of for 8. I was just like, I don't know how I feel about the feel of these types of Resident Evil. I think it's good mechanically, good gameplay wise, but I kind of wish it was its own type of survival horror and not a Resident Evil. But maybe like that fills in and gives me that more comfortable feel as I get further into.
Yeah, no, I understand that. Yeah. I haven't gone back and played all of them the way you have recently either. But mm-hmm. I think that game 5 and 6 were not super well received. Like, I think 5 was fine, but 6 I never even played because it looked so bad. Yeah. And like you've said yourself, like, it's not a very good Resident Evil game. It's not a very good game.
No.
That I think they super course corrected and took it back into a horror genre, but not necessarily like the same sort of survival horror it was before. I think they were trying to do more of a modern horror, which is a lot of the like weird, creepy, not really sure what's going on sense that you find in like the Conjuring movies or the what are those other fucking movies? Sinister or something like that?
Yeah. And like, I think you guys, like listeners who listen to the show constantly and you and everyone, you probably know, like, I'm not a huge fan of tons of gore and overly excessive gore. But, like, usually Resident Evil keeps that to a reasonable point. But, like getting into the fight scene in the garage, he kills the cop by shoving the shovel into his head, and then he falls, but his head part is still sitting there. But then, like, also the chopping off of the leg when you're running from him, before you go to that, and then the chopping off of his arm, and it's just like, it's all a little too excessive, in my opinion. But and like, I haven't played games like Outlast or any of those other horror games that are recent that are the modern horror. So like, maybe that's more what it is and what they were reaching for, like you were saying.
Yeah. But I assume you're gonna keep playing it.
Yeah, I'm gonna keep playing it when I can. I have most of Saturday and Sunday this weekend off, so I should be able to get through a good decent amount of it, unless I have more freaking eye issues, which absolutely sucked. But yeah, I will continue with it. I'm just, the one thing I'm hoping for is that there's better puzzles than what I've seen so far. There's been seemingly no real legit puzzles, in this game.
Well, I mean, that's the puzzle itself.
But I made this argument back with, one of the Tomb Raiders that, like, the way, I can't remember who I was talking to about this, but, like, the way I saw the game, like, there were no puzzles in the tombs and no tombs, but the puzzles themselves were getting out of the combat scenarios that you were in. But, like, now that I've realized how much I hate those games, I was just defending that game because of nostalgia. But, like, this, like, if my puzzle is trying to hide from the enemy because I don't have any way of defending myself, and then running to a point to unlock it to be able to get away, that's not a puzzle. That's just a scare tactic. And it's not going to make for a fun game in my life. But, like, if I have to explore this mansion and backtrack and retrace my steps several times to get certain things, that's what I look for in, like, puzzle-style survival horror-y type games. Like, low amounts of ammunition with good puzzles having to retrace my steps.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm fine with it.
Yeah. But yeah, that's Resident Evil 7. We'll see how far I get this weekend.
During the day.
Probably. Which is, it's funny, because I've talked about it a couple weeks ago. I play this, the survival game, The Forest, which you have to deal with surviving and fighting, like, mutants and cannibals. Creepy as fuck. But, like, I will play that game into the dead of night that can be quite stressful because of the survival-y aspect of it. But I won't really play Resident Evil. But I actually haven't really tried playing Resident Evil at night. It's just, like, my thing. Like, I'm just not going to play it at night. I want to relax at night and not be stressed. It's mostly I don't want to be stressed.
Which I definitely understand that.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Square Enix announced some new stuff, or Crystal Dynamics announced some new stuff for Marvel's Avengers.
Yeah, as far as I can tell, they hadn't been, like, hinting at any of this being released this soon, but at the same time, it's been 3 months. So, it's been 3 months since Kate, so I'm not fully surprised, but I'm still surprised.
Yeah, so on March 18th, so a month from when this is released, there's going to be an upgraded PS5 Xbox Series X S version with upgraded mm-hmm. visuals and frame rates, faster load times, improved destruction, and heroic details. And then the PS5 version will also have haptic feedback unique to each hero.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, which I actually thought that actually sounded pretty neat.
Yeah.
And it's a free upgrade, so if you own Avengers on PS4 or Xbox One, like, you'll get all of this stuff if you have one of the new consoles.
Yeah.
And then the other thing they announced, which I actually think this is actually pretty cool, is they announced the next story DLC featuring Hawkeye, like Clint Barton Hawkeye, and it's going to be Future Imperfect.
Yeah, I mean, like, you say you find it pretty cool. I say it's obvious because I played it and I knew, based on the story progression from Kate's story, I knew the next thing was going to be Clint. Besides the fact that they had announced the next thing was going to be Clint, like...
And I don't think the Clint part, like, I like Hawkeye, don't get me wrong. But I think the cool thing is that they're adapting Future Imperfect.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know anything about the Future Imperfect story. All I know is the story of this game. But, like, and I think they have teased and hinted at going... So, at the end of the Kate storyline, Clint comes back from the future and starts to warn everyone of the incoming attack from the Kree. While doing so, he gets... I don't know the best way to explain, like, the best terms. He gets sick with time poisoning or something? I don't know. They actually, like, it ends with him, like, he starts to phase away, kind of. Like, it's hard to explain, but then, like, they lay him down in bed and he's just unconscious. And that's how it ends. So, okay. Like, you don't know when the Kree are gonna attack or anything. So it seems like this, they go back to the future. With Clint, or maybe go back to the future to find the Clint that was from their time. I don't know. It's weird. So, time travel, it's going to be weird and probably break things or something. Who knows?
Yeah. So from what I read and the little bit of the trailer I watched, it looks like present-day Clint, along with, I guess, Kate or whoever else you have on your team, will travel into the future. It's going to be set in the Wastelands, which is what the U.S. was called in the Old Man Logan, Old Man Hawkeye books. Where it's like some undisclosed point in the future, where the villains won. They basically, like, the villains finally figured it out. They teamed up and murdered all of the heroes, and like they thought it through. Like, the whole present, like, the whole story for Old Man Logan was Mysterio made Logan think that all of the X-Men were villains.
Yeah.
And he killed all of the X-Men himself.
Yeah. Which, that's such a good storyline.
Yeah. And then, so, in this, this wasn't the story from the comics, but Hawk, like, Old Man Hawkeye that's going to show up in the game apparently retired or quit or something like that prior to the Kree invasion. So he wasn't involved in that and feels remorse because everyone died during it.
Mm-hmm.
But sometime along the line, the Hulk becomes the Maestro, which I mentioned it to you the other day. The Maestro is basically all of Banner's intelligence with all of the Hulk's ruthlessness.
Yeah.
And he takes over at least the U.S. in the future imperfect timeline.
Mm-hmm.
He never gets out of the Hulk state. He is always in the Hulk state. He murders any remaining heroes and basically just rules the world as he wants.
Yeah.
There's actually Peter David, who is the original writer for that storyline from 92, has been doing like a bunch, well, not a bunch, but they've done limited series, like 5 or 6 issue sets of like an origin story for the Maestro.
Mm-hmm.
They're on the second one right now, and it's actually pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And then along with all of that, there's also going to be like a present day storyline with Hawkeye where it'll kind of be like the Fraction, the Matt Fraction, David Asia book from a while ago now.
Yeah.
Where it's kind of like what Hawkeye does on his day off. Like, he's going to go to his Brooklyn apartment. He's going to hang out with his dog, Lucky.
Yeah. Which they show a scene in the future where he's like trying to rescue Lucky out of like a destroyed building or something.
Yeah. I hope at some point somebody calls him Pizza Dog.
I'm sure Kate will.
I don't think Kate ever called him Pizza Dog in the comics. Honestly, I don't know if he was ever actually called Pizza Dog in the comics or if it was just like around it, like in the letters pages and how like Fraction and them referred to him. Because there was a while where he didn't have a name in the comics.
Mm-hmm.
They were going to actually name him Arrow at one point because Hawkeye.
Yeah,
but somehow they ended up with Lucky.
Yeah.
He's a good dog, though.
Yeah. All dogs are good dogs.
That's true. That is true. So I guess the biggest news we have is there was a Nintendo Direct today, right before we started recording.
Yeah, they announced it yesterday, like early yesterday, and it was 5 o'clock today, so we were recording a half hour later so that we could eat dinner and stuff after watching it. It had some good stuff on there. It opened up with Pyra and Mythra for new Smash characters.
Yeah, so I'm just gonna say right up front, like, I did not enjoy this Direct at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it started out in such a way where, like, I got super excited because I thought they were gonna do either more DLC or like a sequel to Xenoblade Chronicles 2.
Yeah, when I started watching it, I was like, those are Xenoblade characters. Is there like a Xenoblade Chronicles or like a Xenoblade Chronicles X2 type thing, or what's going on? What's happening? And then it ended up being Pyra for Smash, which...
Yeah, Pyra and Mythra. So, I mean, Pyra, it's the same character, but...
So she's essentially like Zelda and Sheik were in the others. Like, you would do your down B and they would change. Or maybe it's dependent on the moves that they're using. Who knows?
Well, so in Xenoblade, they are two independent characters, but the same body.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, they have different move sets. They have different personalities. In the game, they can swap back and forth. So they're just doing the same thing with this.
I mean, this looks like they have the same move sets, except one's fire, the other one's lightning. The only exception is each of them have their own separate smash, final smash.
Yeah, so to be fair, like, their move sets are actually pretty similar even in the other game. It is a difference between Pyra is fire-based and Mythra is light-based, I believe.
Yeah.
It's usually their big attacks are where, like, there's a difference. You skipped one thing I wanted to bring up. This is the first actual Nintendo Direct in 530 days. The last actual Nintendo Direct was September
2019.
Oh, wow. It's been 111 days since the last mini Direct.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's and they mentioned it at the very beginning that it's been a long time since they've done, like, a proper Direct.
Yeah, they did. They were like, we're happy to be able to bring this in this way to you guys. But, yeah, it's been a long time since we've brought you guys something like this.
Yeah, exactly. So you have things written down in order. I do not, because I'm just going off of the GameSpot write-up.
So I will say with this character announcement of Pyra, even though I don't know the Xenoblade games, the Xenoblade Chronicles, the first one, this brings me more interested in buying Fighter Pass 2 because it has Sephiroth already, but I was so mad about freaking Minecraft Steve that like I was refusing to get it until there was better character. And so this is a better character.
Yeah, I just, as soon as this became Smash Brothers, like, I'm just like, oh, this is going to just be a bad time for 50 minutes.
Yeah.
Because, like, they opened it up with something that I got super excited for, and then they immediately dashed those hopes.
See, another friend of mine also said, like, this is, like, one of the announcements was, like, the best announcement. And I'm, like, maybe 50% in agreement on that. There's still some decent announcements and interesting announcements that, like, I'll just speed through. There's about, I have 24 different titles, like, but, like, they did do, like, two montages that I didn't fully list what they were.
Yeah, there are quite a few things that there's not really a whole lot to say about. But, yeah, just read them off since you have them written down.
So Pyra and Mythra for Smash. Fall Guys is on Switch in the summer. Outer Wilds comes to Switch in the summer.
Which, that game's super cool. Like, if you've never... You like survival games and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I would say depending on, like, what you're in the mood for when it launches, check that out. Because it is actually super cool.
I've been interested in it. I just never gotten it. This one I think you might be more interested in than me. But, like, if you're interested in the Phoenix Wright saga in general, the Famicom Detective Club, there's two games. It's, like, a collection from, I guess, original NES. I don't really know. I've never heard of these things, but it's the first time you're being released in the United States. And they're, like, detective, like Phoenix Wright-esque type narrative games, it seemed like.
Yeah, so they're from the 80s. The first one, it was actually the disc system is what it was released for. Like, the floppy disc system for the Famicom.
Yeah.
It was originally released in 88, and the sequel... Oh, wow. So the first one was April of 88, and the second one was June of 88. So they probably weren't super hard to make. The game was ported to Game Boy Advance in 2004, the Wii Virtual Console in 2007, and the Wii U Virtual Console in 2014.
Yeah.
But it's never been outside of Japan by the look of it.
Yeah, yeah. That's what they said. It's the first time in the U.S. So that's interesting. I feel like you might be interested in that. There's Samurai Warriors 5. I've never really played the Samurai Warriors games. It's a Musou game. If you like them, you'll probably like it. This I was a little bit more interested in. Legend of Mana Remaster. Which Legend of Mana I really enjoyed back in the day.
Wasn't this announced a while ago?
I don't know. I think it was the Saga stuff that was announced a while. I don't remember Legend of Mana being previously in it. But majority of these titles that they had, with the exception of one of them, are summer or Christmas or summer or holiday this year.
Yeah, so the majority of it was supposed to be things in the first half of 2021.
Yeah.
Like, that's what their announcement called it.
Yeah. So Legend of Mana, which, like, I'm excited about. I'll probably get that. Monster Hunter Rise, they showed a bunch of new monster things, and that the Switch peripherals will be available in the United States. Which
you can get that Pro controller.
I'll probably get the Pro controller. Probably. Then the thing that I'm most excited about, Mario fucking Golf. There's like a speed golf mode. There's a story mode. I'm pumped about this. I've always loved the Mario Golf games and just the Mario sports games in general. I've wanted to actually get Mario Tennis, but I heard it wasn't that great.
Yeah, like I played the demo. I think you played the demo for that too, and like it was all right, but like online multiplayer was bad.
Yeah.
Apparently with like all the way that they basically did item degradation with your racket. So like your racket could just randomly break.
Yeah.
And yeah, like that game did not get very well received.
But Mario Golf, I've loved Mario Golf. Hopefully they don't do it bad like they did tennis. But like I said, there's like this speed golf mode, which is interesting. Like you, which has always been an idea of a game that I've wanted to try to like put together, but like that's super fucking dangerous. So it's not a good idea to do that in real life. Then they had a quick, old game or old, old announcement montage, like, Tales from the Borderlands, Capcom Arcade, Stubbs the Zombie, and No More Heroes 3.
So those, so No More Heroes 3 is actually a brand new game.
It's a new game, but they previously announced it.
Oh, okay, sorry. The way you said that, I misunderstood.
Well, yeah, it's old games or previously announced games is what was in this quick montage. But like, they spent a little bit more time on No More Heroes than the other three.
Yeah, I do hope that we get, I hope that since Tales of the Borderlands is like coming out again on different platforms and has been brought up a few different places, I hope they finally fucking do a sequel to that. Because I know the main character from Tales from the Borderlands is in Borderlands 3 as like a NPC.
Yeah.
But I don't believe that Borderlands 3 actually covers what happened to him in between the two games. And, like, Tales from the Borderlands ends on a fucking cliffhanger.
Yeah, well, I know all of Telltale's games were and licenses were bought, so maybe.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I just hope. Also, just to roll back to Mario Golf, I thought the story mode with the Mii character was weird.
I'm not surprised that they're doing that, like, Mii integration, like, they've been trying to do that since the Wii, so I'm not surprised that, like, your Mii is the character that you're playing as, but, like, it makes sense. In most sports games, you're playing as, like, your own made character, so it makes sense to just use your Mii.
Oh, no, I mean, I get what they're doing, I just thought it was super weird to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about it briefly, kind of, like, in chat, like, I'm not getting Mario Golf, so it doesn't really mean anything to me, but I just thought that little bit of it was weird.
Yeah. Then they had, which this one was weird, Neon White, which is a card-based first-person assassin-y game.
It's it's an action RPG dungeon crawler that you use tarot cards.
Yeah, so we all know how much I hate card-based systems when I played, what's that game called? Fucking Kingdom Hearts card game. But this seemed interesting, but I'll probably never get it because it's a card-based system, and fuck those things.
And Annapurna, like, they do a lot of games, but, like, they do a lot of mobile games, which makes me wonder if this is a game that's also going to end up releasing on mobile platforms, meaning it's not going to be... It looks like it was supposed to be very fast-paced, but I have a feeling like it might not be as fast-paced as that video made it look. Also, the announcer was definitely Steve Bloom, and all of his little quips sounded like straight out of fucking Toonami.
Yeah.
Every time he talked, it sounded like whenever Toonami would do like little reviews of stuff with what was the robot's name in Toonami?
Tom.
Tom. Yeah, cuz it's same voice actor.
It is. Next they had DC Superheroines Superhero Girl Teens or something like that. It looked adorable as fuck, but I'm probably not going to get it. Then there Go ahead.
We're no, I was going to say, you say you're not going to get it, but you probably already pre-ordered it.
If it's cheap enough, maybe. Then there was like a Plants vs. Zombie game, which is just their normal first-person-esque shooter multiplayer games. I only care about Plants vs. Zombie if it's their original core style. They're doing Miitopia, which was on the 3DS and DS. 3DS. And then they had the app, and now it's just like a full-on game on your Switch. They announced the Animal Crossing New Horizons Cross Mario stuff.
Which, that stuff looked neat. I just don't know anyone that still plays Animal Crossing.
I mean, I'm sure there's a good number of people that do. I know a handful of people that do. I have stopped, and it's not that I have no interest in going back, but at this point, if I were to go back, I would be time traveling because I missed a bunch of stuff after not having played. And it's just like, I don't want to bother having to continue swimming because swimming sucks, and that's really all I need to do is swim to get all the stuff for the swimming, so I'm kind of just like over it. Then there was the thing that I was next most interested about. It was Mario Golf and Legend of Mana I was like super interested about, and then they showed this, had this premiere thing for Project Triangle Strategy, which is a Square Enix, I think they said it was Square Enix, like tactics-esque type of game.
It's not Square Enix.
No.
Okay. The same team that did Octopath Traveler.
Okay. So and that like made sense because the art was very similar to that.
Yeah, it looks It looks very pretty. Oh, I am sorry, I spoke out of turn. That I did not realize that was actually published by Square Enix.
Yeah. Come on now, Cobb. Come on. Sometimes I know what I'm talking about.
So I honestly thought that was a Nintendo first party game.
Mm-mm. Nope.
Has it come out on anything else?
No, it is Nintendo exclusive, I believe.
Oh no, shit! It came. I forgot about this. It came out on Windows in 2019, mm-hmm. June 2019, and Stadia last April.
Yeah, Stadia, that thing.
Yeah, no, I thought this was like a monolith because they do the Xenoblade stuff, but I thought it was like a studio like Monolith, like just like an internal Nintendo RPG studio.
Yeah, no, it was. I knew it. I was 99% sure it was Square Enix, or at least published by Square Enix. But that game looked really cool. There's a demo out available for it. It should be available now. It was available as soon as the thing ended, so I'll probably play it and talk about it next week. And we told Drew to look into it, so hopefully he'll talk about it next week as well, because he loves those tactics.
My concern with that, I think it looks super cool. Mm-hmm. It's got, like you were saying, it's got the same art style, real pretty, like, hand-painted backgrounds with, like, the pixely character sprites.
Yeah.
As Octopath Traveler. But it's got the more, Final Fantasy Tactics, world design, I guess you'd say, with, like, the levels being, different height levels, so that, like, if an archer is up top, they have, like, more range and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So my only concern is, I thought Octopath Traveler was super cool. I fell off of it pretty quickly, though, because there was no reason to keep playing it.
Mm-hmm.
There was no overarching story. Every character was their own story.
Yeah.
So it's hard to like put into words, but like the gameplay was neat. The game looked really pretty, but there wasn't anything tying it together to make you want to go from like spot to spot. And like whenever you would go to like the next area, like to like basically recruit the next character, whoever you had with you already was like part of the party because it was like a 4-person party, but they weren't part of any story because all the stories were people's backstories basically. Like it was very weird and just disconnected. And I hope that's not the case for this game. Like I hope this game actually has a narrative that makes people want to keep playing it.
Yeah, yeah. I can see that. I haven't played Octopath Traveler. I only played a little bit of the demo when that was available 5-6 years ago, whatever it was. Like, obviously not that
long. It was 2018, which I thought that game came out a little longer ago too, but.
I've always been interested in it, but hearing that from you and from other people where it's like, it's mostly disjointed, I've like pushed it off because it ends up being one of those longer type games.
Yeah. And it's a shame because like if you like turn-based RPGs like that, the combat was fun. The characters were actually really cool. Like I liked all of the individual characters. They just had, there was nothing that actually tied them together.
Mm-hmm.
Like every character was just its own thing. And whoever you happen to have with you when you did their story beat were just the other people in your party. Like they had no relevance to the actual narrative.
This game at least looks like there's like an overarching, like Final Fantasy Tactics-esque political narrative going on.
Octopath looks like that too, though.
Yeah.
That's why I said, like, I want to see more of this. It looks cool, and I really did like the way Octopath was, like, set up, like mechanically and artistically. It's just there wasn't enough there to keep me, like, enthralled for 30 hours or however long the game is.
I can get that. Next up, which is just really just a title card for Star Wars Hunters?
Yeah, well, they say it's a free-to-play competitive shooter. So
okay.
And it takes place between episodes 6 and 7.
Okay. I must have missed that when they explained that, or I must have not seen it when they were saying that. But, I mean, I was intrigued because it's Star Wars and Bounty Hunters. Like, there's so much of that universe that could be explored beyond Jedi that I'm intrigued whenever they try to do something.
God, stop hating Jedi. They did nothing to you.
They did everything. They did everything. Next up, we had Knockout City, which looked like arms crossed with hot potato, just minus the long arms. I don't know. I don't know what to think about that game, but it was weird and interesting. Then they had the World's End Club.
So I said it that way in my head the first time too, and that's how I heard them say it. I thought this was like part of the World Ends With You, but it's not.
Yeah, that's what I, like, when I, even when I read it World Ends Club and not World's End Club.
Yeah, it's apparently an it's an iOS game that's just getting, like, a Switch, like, enhanced port.
Yeah. I'm not really, like, too thrilled or enthused or whatever about it. It's just, like, whatever. Switch, I assume Switch is the only one getting this, so it's kind of a Switch exclusive, maybe? Switch is getting a physical edition of Hades. It comes with an art book, a digital download for the soundtrack, which
it's only on Switch and PC.
True.
So,
I thought it was on other stuff.
No, at least not right now.
But it comes with an art book, digital download of the music, and the game itself, which, I mean, and it's, in a couple of months, it's coming out. If you haven't gotten that game, like, I will literally say, if you have not gotten that game, just wait for this, because that is such a good deal.
Yeah, that is actually a cool thing.
Cause, like, the music is really good. Like, music for all of, their games has always been really good. And then getting the art book, cause the art is really good as well, so. It kind of makes me upset that I bought it, because now I'm like, I kind of want that. As much as I'm like, as much as I'm not like 100% thrilled about the game, I still enjoyed it enough to like want the art book and want the soundtrack.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Then there's only a handful more. They announced a Ninja Gaiden collection for the first, for the three Ninja Gaiden games.
It was Ninja Gaiden Sigma 2, and 3 Razor's Edge, which are all enhanced ports of their original games that includes all DLC.
Yeah. We got a quick look at Age of Calamity DLC.
Which I'm sure you were just thrilled to get more fucking Age of Calamity.
The game ended up not being what I wanted it to be, so I'm not really thrilled with anything further beyond that.
And like, it was like a whole, like, expansion pass. Like, they have a whole bunch of stuff planned for it.
Some of the stuff was just, like, new weapons for Link. And I'm like, come on, guys. Like, give us, like, more than that. Like, I'll have to wait and see what it actually was. It was just, like, a quick screenshot of everything coming, and I didn't get to, like, read it because it was that fast.
So it's an expansion pass. You will get access to new characters, costumes, weapons, and locations to travel to that have new challenges. The first major content update will launch sometime in June, with the next one coming in November.
Yeah, the game was fun enough to where I did everything I had to do to get to the end and beat it. But, like, I'm over it, just because it wasn't what I was expecting. Still a great game and still fun, and maybe eventually I might go back to it and just play around more with it, but I got my fill of it at 50 hours. Or 40, over 40 hours.
I can get that.
Then they had another quick montage. They showed Bravely Default 2 and, like, one or two others I can't really remember. And then, they faked us all out with the creator or director of Breath of the Wild and Legend of Zelda.
Oh, that was such a bullshit announcement. You probably think I'm here to talk about Breath of the Wild 2, but I'm not. Fuck everybody.
Yeah, they faked us all out by having him out, but immediately said, I am not here to talk about Breath of the Wild. That is, we're working on that. It is coming. We'll have more information in the future.
No, here's a remake of the game that everybody hates from the mainline Zeldas.
That game was really good, actually.
It is the least liked of, like, the mainline Zelda games.
Probably because of the motion controls.
No, I mean, 100%. And I did not like what they were doing with the controls for the port. I understand, like, they had to do something because of the way the game was made, but
I mean, it's better than motion controls.
Maybe.
But, like, the way they did, like, so it's a, it is Skyward Sword is being an HD version for the Switch. If you have not caught that yet. And so you can play with motion controls, which the Joy-Cons are much better motion controls than the Wii's and Wiimotes and the Wiimote Pluses. But on top of that, they added an ability to be able to play without motion controls because, like, the Switch Lite and things like, and, like, people who just don't want to use motion controls, you wouldn't be able to play it otherwise. In order to control the sword, you push the, right stick in the direction that you want to push. So if you want to attack down, you pull the stick down. If you want to attack upwards, you push the stick upwards. Diagonal up, diagonal down, whatever. It's in that direction.
Yeah, I am sure people will get used to that. But, like, inherently, that just feels like it's going to be confusing. Because, like, you know, like, the right stick is what you use for the camera.
See, that's the thing. I don't think that's just how it is. I think you have to lock onto the enemy to do it.
Well, no, because if you had to lock onto the enemy to do it, then how would you, like, slash grass or pots or bushes or anything like that?
You press a normal attacking button.
I have a feeling that it's going to be that because...
But that's the thing. Like, if that's how it is, then you're right. There is no way to control the camera. And you need to have a way to control the camera. It's a 3D Zelda game.
There was no way to control it on the Wii. Like, it was the Wii was probably, like, the D-pad or something like that. So you'll probably use, like, the bumpers to move the camera?
I mean, maybe. I'm not sure. I'd have to see more into it.
Zeldas don't usually have, like, Breath of the Wild did because it was, like, modern, but a lot of Zelda games didn't have, like, normal camera movement because they never really had the second analog stick. Because, like, even, what was the one that came out on GameCube and Wii? Twilight Princess. The Wii didn't have a way to move a camera. Like, you just had the D-pad on the one controller, and the Nunchuck had the stick on it.
Wouldn't it be you move the Wiimote to the side and it turns the camera in that direction?
No, they didn't
Like, you go to the edge of the camera, you go to the edge of the screen and it'll turn the camera that way?
No, because that game was actually a GameCube game that was ported, so it didn't have crazy motion controls.
Yeah, but...
Skyward Sword was the one that had all the crazy motion controls.
I know that. I'm just saying, like, it probably was an easy...
No, you used... I'm telling you, you used the D-pad to do it. Like, it was just... So did you ever play Ocarina of Time?
I mean, I have. It's been forever.
So like the little bit of camera stuff you have, and even like Mario 64, you use the C buttons on the N64 controller. It was the same with this. You use the D-pad. Basically, like, up and down gave you like your different like distances, and then left and right just rotated the camera around you.
Okay, so left and right now, but now if you're giving people a full stick. Like, it would, to me, just make sense, and yeah, we're talking Nintendo, so who knows, to me it would make sense that the motion control attacking is a lock-on specific, or a certain button has to be pressed in order to do it, because you don't need that close and that accurate attacking all the time.
So, I think it came down to the way the game, like, as we've seen with other releases, Nintendo's not really putting any work into their re-releases. They had to put work into this one, because... they can't require motion controls, or they actually remove the ability for the Switch Lite to be used.
Yeah.
So I think having it be like just the analog stick was the easiest way to convert those motion controls without having to recode the combat system.
Yeah. I mean,
so I said I would put money down that like the left and right bumpers are what you use to rotate your camera, and the right analog stick is always what you use to control your sword.
Which, I mean, honestly, it's a little dated, but it's not terrible.
Yeah, I mean, look, at $60, I am 1,000% not buying this game. It's a 10-year-old Zelda game that I didn't play when it originally came out because I didn't like it.
But, like, Skyward Sword, I did play, it was so good. Like, the whole world, like, it being the beginning of all time, or all Legend of Zelda timeline, and everything, like, the whole story, like, with it, it's just... Even, like, the final battle, which was kind of a pain in the ass, was also really freaking awesome.
Yeah, I remember trying it once, not liking anything about it, and just, cool, I don't need to spend that money.
I mean, and again, like, you are against motion controls. You were probably against motion controls back then.
Like, they're not good.
Yeah, but now it's different. Like, I wasn't adamantly against motion controls. I was willing to work with it. And I played the game, and it is a good game. It is a good Zelda game. It is a good story. The controls are unfortunate, but it is still, like, overall, it was good.
I mean, like, for a game to have a good story, but not play well, like, $60 for it, like, Nintendo keeps doing this, and they keep getting away with it. Like, they're just re-releasing decades old games at full price. I mean, I'm going to talk about another one in a minute.
I mean, was Wind Waker $60 when it came? It was $40 when Wind Waker came out.
No, I meant on the Switch.
Okay.
Was Wind Waker cheaper?
Wind Waker was free at one point.
Didn't it have something weird where, like, if you bought, like, a specific game, you could get Wind Waker for free?
Yeah. Wind Waker was free at one point. And then, so after that, after they faked us out with no new Breath of the Wild 2 news and Skyward Sword Remaster, with peripherals, Joy-Cons, they had one final announcement, and it was Splatoon 3.
Which is cool.
Yeah, I've always wanted to get into that game, but never really had the time or the ability to get into that game. Or, like, either, like, I couldn't afford it when it first came out, and then it was, like, it wouldn't have been worth it getting into it at that time, or, like, it was mostly I couldn't afford it when it came out, and it wouldn't have been worth it getting it afterwards. That, like, you know, I might think about getting this one. I've always been really interested in those games. I mostly want them to have, like, some sort of single-player campaign thing for it, but I know they're not.
Yeah, and so, actually, Splatoon 2 had single-player content.
It wasn't much, though. It was, like, training.
It was actual, like platforming levels with bosses at the end.
Okay.
It was actually kind of neat, because I got Splatoon 2, and, like, because I had never played Splatoon 1.
Yeah.
And it was super cool, but for me, like, it kind of fell into that same thing as most games that are, like, strict, like, majority multiplayer. Like, at a certain point, like, I just don't want to play things where you're completely reliant on other people to have a good time.
Yeah.
Like, because it's all team-based stuff, if your team doesn't know what the fuck they're doing, you're just going to keep losing.
Yeah, and that's also my other detractor, is, like, I would want to play this with people I know who have it, and I don't know anybody else who has it, and I'm not social on video games enough to, like, make friends while playing.
Exactly, and, like, I don't think you can easily, like, I know you can do, like, party chat, like, with your friends on Switch, like, through the app and everything. I don't know if that works with just, like, lobbies, does it?
Yeah, if you open up the Switch chat, it'll automatically connect you to your team if you're in your game that you're playing.
Okay, so so you don't have to know the people for that to happen.
No, it's like I was on a Animal Crossing chat with friends that I wasn't friends with on Switch. I was on a friend's island, and so that we were able to talk with each other while we were on the island.
Yeah, but that was friends and in Animal Crossing. I don't know if like Mario Kart or.
I was on a friend's island talking to people I wasn't friends with on a friend's island.
But I apologize. So that was in Animal Crossing. I don't know if all the games do that. Like, I don't want to assume.
I've never tried. Anytime I played online, it was with people that I'm friends with. And like, if we weren't using Zoom or Discord or whatever, we would use that and it would just load up. But like, again, like, the Smash Bros. Lobby, the way Smash Bros. Works kind of terrible because as the matches are loading, it cuts out and you can't talk to anybody until the match is loaded. So it's I don't know. I don't really know how it works. But
yeah, I'm just, like, I don't know that I'll buy it again, but I'm just curious how that does work. Like,
yeah,
if you can just, if you can do, like, voice chat. I mean, I wouldn't want to because the internet is full of just horrible fucking people.
Yeah, Destruction All-Stars. I actually played that for 30 seconds and hated it. It got in trouble because people got in trouble because, the mic is automatically turned on your PlayStation 5 controller. So you have to actively turn it off. And so little 12-year-old shits are keeping their mic on and like shit talking you and being little pains in the asses, because like you can't turn off and mute everyone before a match starts or something like
that. Yeah, like, apparently all that stuff is, like, super buried in the system to do it.
Yeah.
That's why, like, the first thing I do every time I turn my PS4 on, or PS5 on, is actually hit the mute button on the microphone.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just haven't dug around to try and turn all of that off.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I never want voice chat enabled, ever. If I'm going to talk to somebody while I'm playing it, I'm going to fucking just call them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you could just do a party chat and talk to them while playing the game.
I mean, I don't have a headset.
I didn't get their voice coming out of the TV.
That sounds fucking awful.
Or it might come out of the controller. I don't know.
Apparently it does. I believe I heard somebody say it comes out of the controller, which sounds even worse.
I don't know. I have the headset, so I actually play with that on more often than not.
Yeah, like the only time I wear, and like Drew and I were talking about this a little like last week. The only time I wear headphones really is for this.
Mm-hmm.
The headphones I have, like, they're better than my old ones, but they're still super uncomfortable to have on.
Yeah, I mean, I live with headphones because I have headphones for work. I have headphones for gaming.
Like,
Yeah.
I just, everything goes through speakers for me. I have earbuds that are okay, but I only ever really put one in at a time because I don't like the in-ear earbuds all that much. Like, I don't like not hearing what's going on around me. And apparently, like, The expensive ones have like a pass-through filter you can put onto them, but I don't know, like I can't bring myself to spend more than like $15 on like a pair of headphones or
I refuse to spend more than $30 on a pair of headphones.
Yeah, like I mean you spent $100 on a pair of headphones.
Well, I'm not talking about like the gaming headphones. I'm talking about like and not even like audio headphones for this. I'm talking about just like doing stuff like jogging or walking like normal activity headphones.
Okay.
Like yeah, like I'm willing to spend a little bit more on things that I know I'm going to wear a lot, like my Audio Technicas or like the PS5 ones. But like for something that I'm going to wear while jogging or whatever, that shit's going to break eventually anyway. I'd refuse to spend more than $30 on it.
That makes, yeah, no, like I had like, so when I got the phone I have now, I bought, I think they were 20, which was like, it was more than I wanted to spend on like I don't even know if they're Samsung now that I say about it. I don't think they are, because Samsung would have been way more expensive. Of, like, wireless earbuds that go in, like, a little case. And, like, they're fine, but also they're super annoying because they have, like, this, like, touch feature on them where, like, if you touch them, it pauses stuff. Or if you double tap them, it'll, like, skip to the next track. But, like, sometimes I pause it by accident when I'm just adjusting it in my ear because I don't like pushing them all the way in.
Yeah.
But I don't have any other choice because phones don't come with headphone jacks anymore.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so... Like, I would actually, like, if you and I were playing a game online, I would, like, call you on Facebook Messenger before using anything through the system.
I would refuse to answer.
I mean, that's fine. Like, you don't have to answer. I mean, look, the odds of it ever happening are slim to none, but...
But, like, if me and you are playing a game on the PS... The only system I would answer for is Switch. Because I already have to use my phone to talk to somebody anyway. But, like, if we're playing a game on Xbox or PlayStation... And you try calling me on Facebook Messenger to talk to me while we're playing a game, I would either message you and say, call me on the damn system, or I would just not respond at all.
Yeah, which, I mean, that is an absolutely valid response. Like, I don't have a headset that I can connect to the PlayStation, and I'm fucking not having it go through the controller.
Wait, what about, you had a PS4, right?
We've been over this before. I threw that fucking earbud thing away years ago.
Man, I still use that for work.
That thing right was now. So fucking uncomfortable.
I mean, I would use it all the time when we played World. It sucks because it would pick up everything coming out of my soundbar. But I use that shit for work now. It stays plugged into my work computer.
Yeah, no, like so my work actually bought it for me. I have a $100 like Logitech like wireless headset that is actually super comfortable. Has fucking terrible quality though. But there's no way to connect that to the PlayStation.
So my work provided me with an Encore Pro 320. It's a USB headset that the foam for it is stiffer than like wood, and like it's a single ear headset. No, it's a double ear headset. But like the foam around the ear parts is so uncomfortable and it's so tiny that I refuse to use it. That like once my PC was set up, I asked the IT guy, do I need to use this headset, or like is this system only set up for this headset, or can I use my own personal one? And he's like, you can use your own personal ones if you want to. So I used my PS5 headset for the longest time, and then like because I like I'd be using the PS5 headset to listen to whatever I'm listening to on my PC while working, I plugged in my PS4 headset so I could easily just pause, take the one headset off, and put this one on in, and it works fine.
Yeah.
But, anyway, that was the Direct. But going along with Nintendo, Cobb, you played a Nintendo game?
Yeah, so I got, Erica actually bought me, Mario 3D World plus Bowser's Fury.
That is on my list of things that I want to get if I finish everything before Monster Hunter comes out.
So, Mario 3D World is the same game it was on the Wii U. It's fun.
Yeah.
It's a very underrated 3D Mario game, mostly because it was on a console that only like 12 people owned.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't even have it, and I had a Wii U. So
yeah, I never owned it either. We've talked about it before. Yeah, I played the majority of it with your brother while we were both unemployed.
Yeah.
Which shows how old it is, too, because that would have been like late 2013 into early 2014.
Exactly.
It is actually, so it is a lot more challenging than you'd expect it to be, too. Mostly because it is 3D and it's very easy to just misjump and jump right off of a fucking level and die. Mm-hmm. Especially when you're in some of the more complicated platforming stuff.
It's got that Sonic 3D kind of thing to it. Like Sonic 3D, although it was more isometric and you were able to place yourself more. And I'm talking Sega Sonic 3D.
Yeah.
It's like it was like still you had that chance of like over processing your jump and over jumping because of how the level was laid out that you could just jump off the edge, no problem.
Yeah. Yeah. No. That is exactly it. And then there's also just situations where the mechanics of the game, like if you're running and you like jump, like, or even if you're just running, like you skid stop on like everything. So it's real easy to like skid stop or just jump when you only meant to do like a small jump and you just fucking end up long jumping basically.
Yeah.
Especially when you're in like the cat suit, because the cat suit's very kind of like nimble and just all over the place.
Yeah.
The cat suit also has like the dive mechanic where if you tap, I want to say like X or Y while you're in the air, you do like this dive bomb diagonally, but you have no real control over it. So if you just, if you do that by mistake, there's a good chance you're just dive bombing off the level.
Yeah.
It's not just, like it's like a lock on thing.
That's just one of those things where like you need to know like the distance that they're going to drop and like how far, like you need to know the angle.
Yeah,
and
exactly. That's just,
and you learn that from playing. So like after you get into it and play it so many times and use that suit enough, you'll know it.
Yeah. And like all the levels are fairly short. It's broken up like a more traditional Mario game with worlds, and each world has like a set number of levels in it. At the end of the level, there's a castle. All the castles are different. Some of them are actually like outside. And when you get to the end of it, you fight a boss. And like not all the boss fights are just like straight like jump on the thing or grab him by the tail or what have you. Like the first boss fight against Bowser, which is like the first castle. He's in like a car driving away from you, throwing bombs. Mm-hmm. And you actually have to run up and kick the bomb back to him before it explodes to do damage to him.
Yeah.
But what I really want to talk about is Bowser's Fury.
Which, when they showcased that, I think like 2 or 3 weeks ago, they did have a quick like 10-minute mini direct or something, not even a direct, but like a 10-minute showcase on Bowser's Fury. Might not even have been 10 minutes. It looked interesting. It looked pretty cool. Like,
yes,
a whole new like 3D-esque Mario game.
Yeah. So I took a bunch of notes about it. So it's delightful. Mm-hmm. It's got kind of a, in a weird way, it's got like a strong Sunshine vibe to it.
Yeah.
So it opens up where Mario's like running along and he finds like this black goo on the ground, and then the goo leads to one of the stylized M's from Sunshine that like get you into all the worlds.
Okay.
And you jump through there and you end up in this, it's called Lake Lapcat. Lapcat.
Mm-hmm.
There's no flood, luckily, but it's this, like, big lake with all these, like, little islands and stuff kind of scattered around it. And all the islands have, lighthouses on them. But a bunch of the water is covered in this black goo. And you find Bowser Jr. And he basically tells you that he needs your help. His dad, Bowser, has been corrupted by this goo and he needs somebody to help him. So basically, the way I took this in, Bowser has been affected by Dynamax energy and is in an uncontrolled Gigantamax, which is Fury Bowser, where he's just giant black goo Bowser.
If that works for you, then yes.
It could also be like a Kaiju, like Power Rangers thing.
Well, that is more so what it kind of is, because I did see in like the showcase you eventually get a big bell that makes you giant to fight Kaiju Bowser as Kaiju.
Let's be real, isn't that different from Pokemon, where you go into a fucking Dynamax raid, the enemy is Gigantamax, and eventually you can Dynamax yourself.
Yeah, but this is not RPG style, so
It's open, so it's open world. Like, you can go do whatever you want in any order. There's no, like, paintings to jump in or anything like that. Bowser Jr. is an ally throughout it, so he kind of hangs around with you. He actually stores all of your power-ups, too, as you find them. So, you can have 5 of every power-up, and it's, so you have the cat suit, the raccoon suit, the boomerang, the fire flower, and just a regular mushroom.
Okay.
I feel like there's one other one I'm missing too.
Ice flower?
No. It's there's one more suit one. It's like a silver bell one. The gold bell's the cat. The silver bell kind of looks like the raccoon, but it behaves a little differently. I forget exactly what the difference is with it, though.
Okay.
But yeah, you can hold up to 5 of each of those, and you can actually swap them kind of on demand. So if you're the cat and you decide you need the fire flower, you can just hit up, select the fire flower, Bowser Jr. will throw you one, and then take the bell back and put it back into your inventory, essentially.
Oh, that's cool.
It's cool. It does make it a little bit easier because you never really have to worry about, like, not having a power-up if you get hit.
Yeah.
The only time you can't use those power-ups is when you are gigantic.
Okay.
But you also have an option with Bowser Jr. to set him to help you. So he can either help you a little bit, a lot, or not at all. And I set it to a little bit just to see what it was like. And he basically just attacks enemies for you.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't attack all of them, can't kill all of them. But like Goombas and stuff like that, he'll just take them out for you if like they're nearby. He'll also pick up coins if he happens to like move over them for you, which is helpful.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much more aggressive he gets if you put it onto a lot, but he was aggressive enough with it set to a little. So yeah, every island, it very typical Mario, like 3D Mario setup. Every island has like shines on it. They're cat shines. And they have these light towers. Not light towers. Fuck. What are those things called? Lighthouses.
Lighthouses.
And they're all covered in black goo. And every time you get a shine, it, knocks the goo off temporarily until you find all of the shines. Every island has 5 shines. It's very puzzle platformy with a lot of that stuff. A lot of the islands have similar shrines or similar ways to get shines. There's usually one just for getting to like the area of the lighthouse. There's Bowser blocks that you can only take out if Bowser hits them when he's rampaging, which I'll talk about that in a minute. There's usually like there's always a collect 5 tokens. So there's 5 little cat tokens hidden around like an island. When you collect all 5 of them, it becomes a shine. Some of them you actually can't get easily until, Bowser is also rampaging. There's a bunch of blue coin trials where you hit a switch and a series of blue coins show up. You collect them all and then another set shows up and it kind of resets the timer for it. Every time.
Yeah.
Some of them are a lot harder than others, but they all seem at least doable once you... It's going to be rare that you manage to do one in, like, just one try. Like, you're going to have to reset a few times to kind of see what the patterns are and sort of, like, get a rhythm down to collect them all.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, you know, there's some, like, mini fights, like, some mini bosses to take out. There's a Shadow Luigi that shows up a few times that you have to chase him down and attack him. Kind of like in Sunshine when the Shadow, like the Goo Mario that's really just Bowser Jr. shows up and you chase him down and like occasionally like squirt him with water. It's very similar to those, only you basically hit him with whatever power-ups you have. So like hit him with boomerangs or fireballs or what have you.
Yeah.
The really cool part of this, though, as you're playing Bowser, there's like a countdown. And he will occasionally rampage. So you can actually see him in the distance in like the lake and you'll see his shell just slowly rise out of the water. Well, of the black goo anyway. And it'll start to spin slowly and it'll get higher and higher. And then when it's at its highest, it'll start to rain and then he'll start to glow and then he'll come back out of his shell and he'll start attacking. The sky goes dark. He starts raining like fire down from the sky. These black pillars erupt from the ground, which... are some of the things that make getting some of those tokens a little bit easier. And there's a few instances where, like question mark blocks and stuff like that only become available when those things come out of the ground. Cause there's no way to get to them otherwise. And then Bowser will also just randomly shoot flame breath at you, like long streams of it. And I want to say the timer's like 5 or 6 minutes where he's not attacking. And then like 1 to 2 minutes where he is attacking. And he basically is on like a rotation with attacks. He'll like the fire and the blocks always rain down, but he'll basically do a fire breath. Then he'll jump into the air, come back down in another spot, do another fire breath. But he always positions himself where Mario's at. So whatever island you're on is going to be the island that he's attacking.
Yeah.
Which becomes really problematic when you're trying to like get shit done and there's just fire breath coming at you all the time.
Yeah.
If you collect a shine though, while he's out, it actually does damage to him that stays on him and knocks him out until his next, like, cycle.
Okay.
So if you time things right, you can have like a shine ready to go, and as soon as he spawns, collect the shine, do damage to him, and knock him out so that you can continue on with the game without him kind of like being on your case.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of like a Mr. X sort of thing, like a more scripted one or a Nemesis.
Yeah, it sounds cool. It sounds fun. While you were going through your description, I did look up. It's not long, that segment. Bowser's Fury. Maybe not long at all.
Maybe like 5 hours.
I was reading average 3 to 5, but average 3. 6 if you like you go for 100%.
Yeah, so it's 100 tokens, I think. Somewhere between 100 and 120 total. Because every island has 5. The islands, like, it does that, like, as, so it's like 5 tokens, 10 tokens, and then 15 and 20, I think, are the, maybe more, no, it's more than that. So it basically, like, it doesn't go by 5s every time. But it's like every, yeah. Like, a certain set of things is when you actually go fight Bowser. So yeah. It's like, every so many, you can go collect the big bell when Bowser comes out. And then actually, like, that's where you would fight him. And generally, you're just trying to get him to fall over so that you can pound on him.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is, like, at a certain point, he starts raining those pillars from the sky. You basically, like, in the later half, you're just picking those pillars up and throwing them at him. Mm-hmm. The cool thing, though, is if you manage to hit the shines as he's rampaging every time, you can basically whittle his health down to where you only have to attack him once, and he'll like, retreat. Because it's the first fight, you actually take his health all the way down before he retreats, and then every fight after that, you do half a bar, he retreats, and then the next time you do the rest of the bar. It's 3 cycles. It's like fight 1, fight 2 is 2 parts, and then fight 3 is 3 parts, or fight 3 is also 2 parts. That he retreats between.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, once you complete that credits roll, you can go back in, collect the rest of the shines, and then there's, like, a final, like, permanent battle, basically.
Yeah.
Like the quote-unquote true ending.
Yeah.
There's also, like, a bunch of, like, one-offs throughout the world, like, Plessy, the dinosaur that you can ride in World, once you unlock it, which is, like, as soon as you fight Bowser the first time, Plessy unlocks. It spawns on every island, like, basically right where you're at, it always spawns so that you can get around the islands quickly.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of, like, race things in the water that you pass through a goal, and it sets up a race on Plessy to, like, follow a path and get a shine before the timer runs out.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun, though. Like, I really liked it. I got through all the main Bowser fights. Each fight, he, like, throws, like, a different thing into his repertoire. I want to say it's 50 shines is the final fight. The final, like, before the credits roll fight. And 48 and 49, like, once you get your 48th shine, or maybe 47th, when Bowser comes out that time, he does not go away again. So your last, like, 2 or 3 shines, he is just constantly there attacking you. You can still do damage to him when you collect the shine, but he does not retreat until you collect the 50 and then go fight him.
Yeah.
Which is fucking intense.
Yeah.
Especially, absolutely. Like, I got to the point where those final shines, a lot of mine were platforming.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not easy to platform while he's also hitting you. Because, like, if you're on, like a moving cart sort of platforming thing, where, like, you have to wait for, like, the thing to move around the track, basically, you've got nowhere to go.
Yeah.
There was something else I was going to say about it, and now I forget what it is. Fuck. Must not have been that important.
Yeah. But it seems like it was worth the get, worth the purchase.
Yeah, and 3D World is fun. I'm on, like, I'm on World 3 or 4 of that before I kind of went over to Bowser's Fury and started, like, just playing that predominantly.
Yeah.
The other thing I was going to say is during, like, the first 50 shines, there's no way to tell what the objectives are on the islands. So, when you go to an island, if the lighthouse has goo on it, the next objective is ready. So, like, if you go to an island that has, like, a blue coin trial thing, that button is not just there from the beginning. It's only there once you've collected the shines that lead up to that one, basically.
Okay.
So, if that's the third shine, that button won't be there until you've gotten the first and second shines.
Okay.
But you have to basically leave an island and then come back to it for it to, like, reset into the next one. which it was a little annoying because, like, there's certain shines that you can just get, like, the token ones and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But then, like, it's like, all right, well, there's three more shines on this island. I guess I'll go jump on Plessy and swim really far away and then swim back so that the goo shows up and I know what the next
thing that is. Yeah, that kind of sounds like they stuck with, like, a Mario, like a 3D Mario-esque style where, like, when you go in, you get the shine, you come out, and then you have to go back in type of thing. Where, like, you go, you get your shine, you get on Plessy, you leave, you go to the next island, you get that shine. Probably, maybe they meant for you to, like, island hop, maybe?
Maybe. It's just, like, island hopping's not that easy. Like, as the early parts of the game, they're super close together, so it is. But then as you get, as you progress, things get further apart, and, like, some of the stuff is actually harder to get to because it's surrounded by the black sludge. So, yeah. Like, you have to clear a bunch of one island before it shines enough light to clear out the sludge to get to the ones near it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a hassle to have to be like, all right, well, let me jump on Plessy and just go away from here for a minute and then come back.
Yeah.
But, like, it doesn't reset anything, like, when you just collect a shine. Like, if you, if I get three of the tokens, collect, like, the initial shine, I still have those three tokens. I can just grab the other two tokens and get a second shine, like, right away.
Yeah.
It's just like that, like, not knowing what the next one is, basically. That's kind of frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently, once you... I haven't gone back into it yet. Once you clear the game and roll credits, when you go back in, the game's just like, hey, here's a map that shows you... You have a map anyway, but the map shows you all the islands that still need shine, that you still have shines to collect on, what their objectives are, and lets you just warp to them.
Yeah.
So it, like, it's like, here, we made this a little bit easier to 100% this, which is cool because it's not a full game. Like we said, it's like 5 hours-ish.
Yeah, three to 6 hours, depending on your playstyle.
Yeah, like, I think it was about 3 hours to get through, like, the 50. That's why I rounded up to, like, 5, because I figured it'd be about 5 to collect the rest of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is cool. Definitely worth checking out.
Nice.
Yeah. What is next? So, I was hoping Drew would be on because he knows a little bit more about this stuff. But Dota 2 has an anime coming in March to Netflix.
Yeah, nice.
It's called Dota Dragon's Blood. It's going to be 8 episodes, and it's going to release on March 25th.
Yeah. Interesting. I mean, like, you had mentioned that to us earlier, and I was just like, that's interesting.
Yeah, because I don't really think of Dota, or League of Legends for that matter, of, like, games that you play for a story. I know they have a lot of lore to them, but I don't know that anyone really cares.
And see, that's the thing, like Dota, League of Legends, what is that game that Drew likes? I mean, Apex to an extent, and even the other one that both you and Drew like,
Overwatch?
Overwatch. Like, they all have characters with lore behind them that you could definitely do an anime on. But, like, I feel like Netflix is dropping the ball here. They see Dota and Dota 2 and see, like, oh, millions of people play this game. They're gonna watch this. No, they're gonna watch an anime about people playing the game, but they're not gonna watch an anime about the game.
Yeah. Cause, like, that's the thing. Like Overwatch has super colorful characters with a lot of personality. Mm-hmm. Because Blizzard did that work.
Yeah.
Dota, like, original Dota, was a community mod for Warcraft 3.
Yeah.
Dota 2 was just an independently developed, like, sequel to that done by Valve.
Basically using the source of Warcraft. Like, it's all looks still exactly like Warcraft 3. It has some, like, different, like, stylized characters and some coloration to it, but, like, it's, I don't think people are going to be interested in this because I don't think people really care about Dota stories.
Yeah, like the hardcore Dota fans, I don't think are going to care about this because they're too busy playing Dota. And, like, they're not playing Dota for lore; they're playing it to play it.
Yeah.
There's definitely, like, a subset. I saw them on Twitter of people that are fans of Dota that are excited for this, which is awesome.
Yeah.
It just seems it just seems weird. Like you said, it seems like one of those things where they saw a game that has a huge player base in the millions, and they went, "Let's do it."
Yeah.
But who knows? And we're completely wrong. Like, none of us are really in the MOBA scene. So.
Yeah. But, and it's also, like, I've come out and said, like, I love, like, lore behind games and lore behind things. Like, I've watched 5 hour long videos of lore on Destiny and like even things like Monster Hunter that's like all under the radar stuff that like you wouldn't know unless you like read all the cards and looked this all up. Like it, I would probably fall down that hole with Dota if I looked enough into it. And I have played Dota 2 enough to be like, this is enjoyable when I'm playing with friends. But like, I don't know if I'll watch an anime for it because like I'm not that big of a fan with it, and I don't know. It's just like yeah, it's weird. It's different. Who knows? I'll have to wait and see what the animation's like before I decide whether or not I'm going to watch it.
Yeah, I think I didn't read a whole lot about this, but I think it's the same studio that did the Castlevania stuff. So like stylistically, it's probably going to look pretty cool.
Yeah.
But moving on, this one actually both of us would probably be a little more interested in. Marvel announced a new MCU docuseries. It's called Assembled.
Mm-hmm.
So the first episode of it is going to actually air on March 12th, and it's going to be the making of WandaVision.
So it's after WandaVision's over.
Yep, the week after. So the way it's apparently going to work, and I wonder if all the shows are actually spaced out like this right now. It's going to be like a thing that airs following the conclusion of something.
Makes sense.
So they've already indicated that Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Loki, Black Widow, and Hawkeye are all going to also have some sort of assembled episode about them.
Yeah.
But this is super cool because like WandaVision, like we talked about it a whole bunch, like it's got a bunch of neat aesthetics. It's pulling in from a bunch of different parts of the MCU with different things.
There's a new main set every episode. Like,
yeah, so like just seeing kind of how they came up with the concept and how they film it and all that, like I imagine that's actually going to be super cool.
Yeah. It'll be pretty sweet. I'll probably watch it.
Yeah, and I mean if it's one episode per series, like
yeah.
At most it'll be an hour, and at that point it's like why not? Like there's no other show releasing that week, so
yeah, that Friday there's nothing else, so instead of watching WandaVision, I'll watch that for that hour.
Yeah, and frankly like some of the other documentary stuff I've seen on Disney Plus, like it's all really good. Like it's interesting.
Yeah,
because there's a making of the Mandalorian, and it's like it's a multiple episodes for season one and multiple episodes for season two that I keep meaning to check out.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this I'm interested in, and it's less than a month away, which also sucks because that means we've only got a couple episodes of WandaVision left.
Yeah.
What do we have? 3, 7, 8, 9.
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
Ugh, it's a bummer. That is a bummer. I did see that apparently the next one maybe, or the one after that, is going to be Modern Family, is going to be one of the sitcoms adapts from, so the talking head things.
Well, yeah, it's like the mockumentary style. So
that's
like,
the word I was looking for.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Like that has been highly prevalent in a lot of shows, not only like Office, Parks and Rec, Modern Family, and I'm sure there's others that we don't know, but like it's also it's a lot of reality TV in general as well that does it. But
true,
yeah, I'm not surprised that that's something that they're going for. I was hoping for like a Vision being Jim type of thing where he's looking at the camera and raising his eyes or whatever.
Well, so I don't know. So I honestly don't remember where this is from, but apparently the actor that plays Wu in WandaVision. Mm-hmm. Played like a version of Jim in The Office.
Yeah, I shared it with you guys. He did. He was,
okay. I couldn't remember where I saw that from. That's
it was later in the season. So probably how many seasons was that show? Eight
or nine.
So probably like seven or eight.
It was nine, believe. Because Steve Carell left season seven.
So then it was like season eight or nine. Seven or eight. He hired their friend who was an actor to come and pretend that he was Jim.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. I do remember that now.
It was one of the cold opens, and so the meme I had shared with you guys was like, "It's nice to see that Jim is that John Krasinski's getting a role in the MCU or something like that."
Right. And I do remember that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, not to talk about WandaVision a whole bunch, but. I was a little bummed that we didn't get like a early mid 90s sitcom this week. It went right to early 2000s.
It was Malcolm in the Middle.
Yeah, which started in the year 2000.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, well, like last week was like what was last week?
It was like Full House and Growing Pains and like the late 80s.
late early 80s, 90s. But, like, those all went into the 90s enough because they lasted long enough that I feel like they kind of tracked. Because it also had, like, a Seventh Heaven type of feel, which was also 90s.
But they missed, like the peak mid-90, like, TGIF era with Boy Meets World and fucking Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Yeah, I mean, that could have worked so well, but, I mean, I wasn't... I liked it.
No,
I was,
you know why it would have worked fucking perfectly? Every episode of Sabrina opened up with her in front of the mirror, magically changing her outfit, and then the last one would be something goofy, and she'd look at the camera and break the fourth wall.
Yeah.
That would have been the perfect fucking opening bit to do, because it was the Halloween one. It could have been Wanda trying on a bunch of different outfits from her different comic book things.
Yeah. But I was happy that it was Malcolm in the Middle. I'm happy Malcolm in the Middle got some recognition, because I feel like that's like an unsung hero of sitcoms.
No, that one's definitely well regarded. I think it's just because it's in that weird era where, like, it's at this point it's 20 years old, but it's kind of like it's after, like, the peak, like, TGIF era, but before kind of, like, the renaissance with, like your How I Met Your Mothers and your Modern Families and stuff like that.
Yeah. And, like, I don't think it's available anywhere for streaming.
Actually, you might be right about that. Let's see. Just Watch.
It looks like it's on Hulu.
Is it?
Yeah. So.
Oh, yeah. Look at that. All seven seasons.
Yeah.
Huh. So that was a good show, though.
I may have to watch it. It looks like it might also be on Prime Video. I don't have to pay for it, but we'll see.
According to Just Watch, it's on just on Hulu and two seasons on DirecTV.
Okay, so I might end up watching that when I'm done with my current Time Killer rewatch. Well, there you go. No, I just finished How I Met Your Mother, and then I started back on season 6 of Supernatural, which is weird. And then maybe I'll rewatch that because that was. I hope it holds up.
We're almost done Buffy and Angel.
Yeah.
We just finished season 6 of Buffy, season 3 of Angel. Nice. So next up is the final season of Buffy and the penultimate season of Angel.
So because you mentioned Angel, not to go too far off on a tangent, I just want to bring this up. There's a comedian named Steve Hofstetter who is very, very active on Twitter, anti-Trump, pro... I wouldn't even say he's pro-Democrat, but he's anti-Trump, anti-Republican. And so, like, anytime any celebrity or big name, like, says something Republican, like, he's been going off on Kevin Sorbo, because Kevin Sorbo, apparently, he's a shitty person now, which
we talked about that last week.
Yeah. He has a quarantine comedy show that he does, like, quarantine live stream comedy show that he does, like, every couple of weeks. They just reached 200 episodes. He had gotten into an argument with the actress who played Buffy in the original 80s movie.
Christy Swanson.
And she ended up blocking him.
Yeah, no, she's a super Trump supporter, too. It was a huge bummer.
Yeah.
Because she's also Lasseter's wife in Psych.
Yeah.
The ex-con woman.
But, so, like, he got into an argument with her. She ended up blocking him. Somebody paid for her cameo to say congratulations on 200 episodes for Steve and everyone who runs their show. And specifically to say how good of a guy Steve is and how awesome he is.
I think I saw you share that, actually.
Yeah, it's the best form of revenge I could ever see. I loved it.
That is funny.
Or vengeance, yeah. Just had to go off on that. MCU docuseries, those are... interesting. I'll probably watch them.
Yeah. So I'm going to actually combine two things real quick. Just going to keep it really short because I don't want to spoil either of them. There's a show on Sci-Fi that we literally just started watching last night called Resident Alien.
That's with Tudyk, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Alan Tudyk is the main character. He's an alien from outer space, obviously, who came to destroy the Earth.
Yeah.
But his ship got struck by lightning and he crashed and lost the thing that was supposed to kill all the humans. And he's been searching for it in, like, Colorado in, like, the mountains.
Yeah.
But in order to do that, he found, like, a dude in, like, a remote cabin on, like, a lake outside of, like, a really small town. Murdered him, threw him into the frozen lake, and then his species can adopt, like, the cellular makeup of other species. So he turned into him, and that guy happens to look like Alan Tudyk.
Nice.
And now he has to pretend to be the town's doctor after their former doctor died after being poisoned and then trying to give himself a tracheotomy so that he could breathe. He just didn't get it done in time and died.
Wow.
It is super funny, though. Like, both dark funny and, like, funny funny.
Yeah.
Like, he gets drunk in the first episode and, like, starts dancing, and he doesn't know how to. He learned the English language from watching Law and Order marathons.
Okay.
So, like, every time a mystery thing happens, he does the dun-dun.
I've seen, like, teasers and trailers for that, and I want to watch it. So. Yeah.
It's only three episodes in. I think the fourth one is on, like, tonight or tomorrow. Definitely worth checking out. I don't know if it's available on anything to stream at the moment. I can tell you, though. So I don't know if, like, Sci-Fi has any deals anywhere. It looks like you can buy it on Amazon. Oh, actually, apparently it's streaming on Sci-Fi. I don't know if Sci-Fi has, like a CW-esque thing.
Let's see. I'll click into it and see what it says.
Oh, actually, I think you can actually just watch straight off of their website.
Which I like when stations do that. Yeah, it looks like I can watch it. But let's move on.
Yeah, so good show, though. Worth checking out. And then we also watched the second season of The Boys. Like, well, we finished it. We've been watching it slowly over the last, like, week or two. Mm-hmm. Did you ever watch the first season of that?
No, it is on my list of things that every time I see a trailer, because I've been watching a lot of Hulu, every time I see a trailer, I'm like, I need to watch.
Yeah, it's on Amazon Prime. It's a very good show. It's very fucking brutal.
Yeah.
The second season, even more so. There's a straight up Nazi character.
Mm-hmm.
And the last episode has one of the best fucking just beat down fight scenes I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like an awesome choreography. Like, it's not like something like out of the MCU or whatever. It's literally just like characters just beating the shit out of each other.
Nice.
Yeah, that is a good show. It's fucking dark and it's hard. It's not an easy show to watch like several episodes of, in a row. Like, maybe like the most we ever did was like two at a time. But like it's really good and definitely worth watching. I think both seasons are just eight episodes a piece.
Yeah, it's I think I'll watch that when I'm done this season of Supernatural.
Yeah, it's like, that's worth it.
I delayed getting into the season of Supernatural because season five ended so damn well, and like this is when it starts to get bad that I'm like I was like I don't want to ruin this. So like I delayed.
Is this like it gets bad and then it gets better again afterwards?
That's what I hear. Like season like 7, 8, and 9 aren't that great, but then season 10 through 15 it gets better type of thing. But like some people even said like I'll just skip these seasons, and I'm like, no, if I'm gonna watch it, I'm gonna watch it all. So like I delayed, and like even season 6 is just like, so far I'm like 6 or 7 episodes in and I'm just like, I'm just not feeling it. This is weird. Like it ended so well and it's just like, I don't know, it's just weird.
But yeah, after you're done that season, 16 episodes of The Boys.
Yeah, and that I can do in like a weekend or a week.
I'll try and remind you. Honestly, it might take you a little bit longer because, like I said, it's a hard show to, like, marathon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, like, some of the... there's a lot of, like, dark humor in a lot of these episodes, but, like, the episodes are just kind of fucking dense with, like...
Yeah.
Because they are. It's very dark. Like, it's not, like, a happy show.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, one or two episodes and you're going to want, like, a palate cleanser.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, seems that we got a little confirmation that Rian Johnson may still be doing his own Star Wars trilogy.
Yeah.
So,
I've seen people getting mad at this news, and I'm like, I personally did not think the Last Jedi was that bad.
The Last Jedi had a lot of problems. Like the whole Canto Bight stuff was boring.
I feel like the way he like if he had his own trilogy, it'll be great. But because he was thrown into something that, like his vision probably wasn't to be in the middle of a war. Like, I don't know. That's the thing.
So he seemed to, the biggest complaints for Johnson is the way he handled legacy characters. Because frankly, like all the existing characters were not treated well by him. Like that's just what happened. And like you said, like he basically got handed off in like a relay race. Like JJ started it. And then he got handed what JJ did and had to come up with something to work with that. And, like, that's hard to do. Like, George Lucas wrote the original three Star Wars. Well, he wrote all six of the original Star Wars, but, like, he wrote the original three, but did not direct all of them.
Yeah.
So, like, they really, and I think we said it before, like, those, that the sequel trilogy needed some sort of consistent person involved in the actual creative process. And Kathleen Kennedy was not that person.
Yeah.
Like, they needed, like, either the same writer or the same director or just one person that had, like, a high amount of impact on the direction to kind of keep it cohesive. Because you did. You had J.J. went one direction, Johnson went a different direction, and then J.J. had to try and undo as much as he could that Ryan did to bring it back into his direction.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, it made the whole thing super disjointed. But,
yeah,
so author Soraya Wilson, I'm assuming that's how you say it because there's an I in her name. She interviewed Rian Johnson and tweeted the following out. I'm just going to post this now because I can see that I'm going to get a lot of requests. Yes, Rian's Star Wars trilogy is still on. No dates or timelines because he has other projects going on, but it is happening. That is all I know about it.
Mm-hmm.
Which fits. So Johnson's trilogy was originally announced in 2017. After Rise of Skywalker, though, Lucasfilm, Disney said that they were going to be taken like a hiatus from the films for a while, and they did end up canceling the Game of Thrones guys trilogy, but that, I think that was more to do with them signing an exclusive contract with Netflix than anything else.
Yeah.
But like, we just haven't heard anything about Johnson's trilogy since then. What we do know is from the original announcement, he was set to write and direct the first film, but may only be involved in the creative process for the second and third.
Yeah.
Which is fine, like, because, like, what I was just saying, like, having somebody involved with the creative process is what those movies needed, like one individual.
Mm-hmm.
And did you ever watch Knives Out?
No, I have not seen it yet.
That's a really good movie, and it shows that, like, Rian Johnson knows how to tell a story. He knows how to tell a compelling story. He's just not good at telling somebody else's story, or trying to continue someone else's story. Like, but, like, his movie was supposed to be about new characters unrelated to what we know in a different part of the universe.
Yeah.
So even if it was like force users and stuff that you hate, like, it would have been a separate section of the galaxy that he could have just kind of like played with.
And don't get, when I shit on like the Jedi stories a lot, don't get me wrong. It's not that I hate the Jedi. It's that there's more than just the Skywalker saga. It's just more than just that brand, that portion of the universe. I would love to get a Skywalker story on the other side of the galaxy that, like, that has, or did I say Skywalker?
You
story?
Did. I was waiting for you to figure that out.
I would like to. I wouldn't have a problem seeing a Jedi story on the other side of the galaxy that, like, maybe the Jedi are the bad guys and the Sith are the good guy type of thing, or maybe like they believe more in the balance that the Sith give and less in the balance. Like, it's just I'm tired of.
So you want a story about the Witches of Dathomir?
I want a story not about people surrounding the Skywalker.
And I mean, like, those exist. They just don't exist in movies.
Exactly. And that's what I want. Like, that's why I wasn't
read
all
a
too
book.
Thrilled with, that's why I wasn't all too thrilled with, like, Solo. Because I'm like, Solo, it's, like, it's not in the Skywalker saga, but it's still part of the Skywalker. Like, I loved Rogue One. Because even though, yeah, it's, like, a prequel to the original Star Wars, It was like, it wasn't about force users. It was about, like, others, like, it was about leading into everything we know. And, like, they were essentially original characters.
Yeah. And look, I liked both of those movies. I thought Solo was a lot of fun.
I've been meaning to watch Solo. I haven't gotten it.
Wait, so you just said you didn't like it and you never watched it?
I said I haven't gotten into it. I never said I liked it. But I said, like, I wasn't down for it, and I was a little iffy about it, mostly because it still dealt with Skywalker saga characters.
But, so, like, I understand your thinking. Like, it's a galaxy, there's other things, but, like, this story is about this one particular family.
Yeah.
Like, that's, and that's the thing, like, it would be silly to tell the story about this family and not have it end properly.
Well, yeah, and that's why, like, at this, like, the 9 movies, it's fine. It's good. Like, we don't need any more about the Skywalker. And we could maybe even step away from the Force users and the Jedi. But, you know, do with it what you will. People like space magic, so you're probably going to use Force users anyway.
Yeah. Honestly, like, looking back at the sequels, I kind of wish that, like, especially after watching that episode 1 documentary, I kind of wished that George Lucas would have written the scripts for the three movies, and then J.J., Johnson, and whoever else directed the three. Because I think at that point we would have had something that was an actual continuation of the previous six movies, but that actually had, like, direction to it to make them cohesive stories.
Yeah.
But we didn't get those, so we just had to deal with what we got. The next planned movie, though, is the Rogue Squadron one from Patty Jenkins. So that's probably not going to have anything to do with Skywalkers.
Which and Rogue Squadron, there's a lot of fucking things you can do with that. I'm all for it. I am pumped about it.
Yeah, like that should actually be very cool. I'm interested to see like what era it takes place in.
Yeah.
But yeah. And the last bit of news, we mentioned last week that Bella Ramsey was cast as Ellie from The Last of Us.
Yeah, and she's known for Lyanna Mormont from
Game of Thrones. And then they never did scenes together, but fellow Game of Thrones cast member Pedro Pascal is going to be Joel in the HBO Max The Last of Us series.
I feel like that's a really good casting.
Yeah, no, he is a very good actor. Like,
yeah,
because you watched all of Game of Thrones, right?
Yes, I did. I we said this last week when we were talking about it, because Drutton doesn't know Pedro Pascal, has never watched anything he's been in. If you had told me Pedro Pascal from Game of Thrones, I would not know. Because, like, I know who he is. You'd have to tell me who he is and what happens to him.
Oberyn Martell, he got squished.
But because of how many characters there are, it's just all a blur.
But, like, between his portrayal on that show, the drastically different portrayal of Mando in The Mandalorian, and then his just over the fucking top performance in Wonder Woman. Like, yeah. The guy's not afraid to fucking try different things.
Yeah.
So I think because of how he portrays Mando, I think he'll be really good at that sort of like cold but caring thing that that Joel has.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm interested in that. I am very annoyed at the people that are just like, it should have been such and such, or this is wrong. He looks nothing like the character. Like, everyone wanted them to cast the dude that played Jaime in Game of Thrones, because with a beard, he kind of looks like Joel.
Yeah, but you know what? I honestly think Pedro Pascal's a better actor than that guy.
Probably. I've only ever seen that guy in Game of Thrones. I can't pronounce his name. It's like Nikolaj something or other.
Yeah, he's got a super, like,
European name.
What's I was gonna say Swedish, but I don't think it's Swedish.
But he was good in Game of Thrones. Like, he definitely had, like, some character range going there, but...
Yeah.
Like, just because somebody looks like a character doesn't mean they should play that character.
Exactly.
Like, honestly, the only... This character is like this character, like, they should play them. Like, it would be Troy Baker. Like... He's the voice of Joel. He did all the mocap for Joel. Like, if anyone else was going to play him that was, like, a fan casting, that's the only reasonable one.
Yeah.
And he's in his 40s, so...
Yeah.
You know, a little makeup will make him look like he's in his late 40s.
Yeah. Like I said, I think it's a fantastic casting.
Yeah. Yeah. Pedro Pascal and Bella Ramsey will be the people
in charge there. I feel like they did perfect with both of them.
Yeah, I'm curious to see who they get for some of the other roles. Like, because, like, there aren't a lot of characters in that show, in that game, that, like, are around for, like, a long time.
Yeah, there's the woman at the beginning who dies. And
Tess?
Then,
is that Tess? Or is that somebody else?
I believe it was Tess. And then you have the guy from the church who gets you, like, a vehicle or a way out. But, like, I think he dies.
Right.
And then you have, like, the Raiders.
The Raiders, you have Tommy at a certain point in the game for a little while. Yeah. There's David, the fucking cannibal dude.
Yeah.
Which I'm interested to see. Like, that might not even be a season one thing. Because, like, that was, like, midway through the game.
It's also, are they going to stick through the game story? Or are they going to, like, is the season one going to be Last of Us 1? And then season two going to be, like, their life? And then, like, how many seasons are they going to get? How are they going to break it down?
Yeah,
there's so much.
Like, it is supposed to be loosely based on the first game, on the story of the first game.
Yeah, so I'm excited about that.
Yeah, me too. Like, seeing who the cast is now, I'm definitely more on board with it.
Yeah.
But otherwise, to wrap up this week, we've
real
got.
Quick,
oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Real quick, breaking news. I just learned this. Golden Girls is coming to Disney Plus.
Oh yeah, I saw that too.
That's all. All
right.
I love Betty White, so I had to. I love actually, honestly, all of the actresses.
What the fuck do you have against B. Arthur?
Golden or Girls Estelle is just Getty. Like I have not watched it, and honestly, it's strange to say that Golden Girls kind of still stands up to today's standard.
Dude, like, that show was edgy for its time.
Yeah,
and they made some edgy jokes in that show.
And there are episodes that tackle like modern day racism issues and stuff as well. Like it's crazy. That show's so good. I need to watch it.
That show was almost 40 years ago.
Yeah, that too. And only one standing cast member. And the oldest character, Sophia, was the youngest actress.
Yep.
But yeah, that was a quick aside. Last thing we have is my weekly kaiju wrap up.
Yep, you watched Godzilla vs. Mothra this week.
Yes. I'm gonna start off by saying I find the Mothra, like, any movie where Mothra is a title character so far, I find it boring. Because they always have to deal with those two girls that are miniature, those two miniature girls, which in this one, they're known as the Cosmos. I can't remember in the previous versions when they were in if they were known as, like, the Cosmos or anything. But, like, if Mothra is one of, like, the lead monsters, I was just bored because, like, one of the more annoying things is they have to sing to Mothra to communicate with her.
Oh, that's
weird. The singing just takes so long, and it kind of takes me out of it. The movie as a whole was interesting, but, like, a meteor hits the Earth, and it hits near where Godzilla was resting because it was being held down by Mecha King Ghidorah. So, like, the meteor hits and awakens Godzilla. Then there's, like, environmental issues happening at the same time, which causes a landslide and uncovers Mothra's egg. And you learn the tale that, like, Mothra and Batra would fight because Batra was going to kill all humans and Mothra was there to save and keep the balance of the planet. And then there's, one of the lead characters, he's basically, like, I wouldn't say I guess he would be like an Indiana Jones type of guy or more like a Nathan Drake. Like Indiana Jones is like, this deserves to be in a museum. This guy was like, I need to get this stuff and make money off. Like he was an archaeologist that was trying to make money out of off the stuff that he was uncovering and finding. And like the characters themselves were just like, uninteresting in this one. The two lead characters was the archaeologist and his ex-wife, whom they both have a kid together, and ended up the kid being a main character about halfway into it. Greedy corporations trying to take control of Mothra, which is the same theme, a similar theme that they had with the original Godzilla vs. Mothra, where they found Mothra's egg off the shore, and so a greedy corporation bought it. And okay. And that's the second time they went with that theme because a TV corporation, bought Kong in Godzilla vs. Kong. So it's kind of weird that, like, corporations buying these rights to these monsters, it's just, like, they were gonna make, in the original Godzilla vs. Mothra, or Mothra vs. Godzilla, they were going to turn, like, an amusement park around Mothra's egg. And then the egg hatched and two little pupae came out and Mothra fought Godzilla, and then died, but as dying, she gave her energy to the egg, and that's when they hatched, and the two little larvae came out, and, like, it's just the fight scenes between Godzilla and Mothra are boring, because, like, when they're larvae, it's just them spraying silk, and then when they're actually Mothra and flying, or even Batra and flying, it's just them flapping their wings, and then either shooting their energy blasts. Like, there's no, like, real actual fight between them. It's kind of just like them headbutting and then flying away and then headbutting and flying away. It was just, I don't know, it was boring. This one was boring.
It sounds it.
It's like it might be more like the Cosmos and the two little girls. Like, I find that, like, annoying and boring. But it's just, yeah, I wasn't all too thrilled with this one. But it was fine. It was better than Kong. but Kong was just bad. And it was probably the American version, which was missing stuff, which is why it was even worse. So the next one is Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla 2. And I think that's 93. or might be 94. I can't remember. I didn't pull it up. Yeah, I think it's 93. Because this series ends in 97. IMDb. I wanted. Yeah. So it's the Showa, or is it the Heisei? I can't remember. Let's scroll down. Yeah, the Heisei era is 84 to 95. My mistake.
The millennium era starts after that, right?
After that it's 98 American Godzilla, and then 99 is Godzilla 2000 Millennium, which is the millennium era, which is 99 to 2000. The next one is Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla 2. The first time we have Rodan, in this era. Also, first time we get to see baby Godzilla.
Oh boy.
In this era. Yeah. There's baby Godzilla in this one, and then becomes little Godzilla in Godzilla vs. Space Godzilla, and then it's Godzilla Jr. in Godzilla vs. Destroyer. It grows, obviously. It's strange that it grows that fast and it's only a year apart from each other.
Look, you don't know what their gestation period and shit are.
No, I don't. But yeah, I personally found Godzilla vs. Mothra boring and kept losing interest in it, but made myself keep watching it because, I mean, it's still a fun kaiju movie. Just, like I said, fight scenes were boring, and, like, I find the Cosmos characters, or, like, the little twin girls, just boring and annoying. And the fact that they have to sing to Mothra, and they sing so many times, and I'm just like, come on, like, we understand. I don't need this, and I don't need you to keep singing anymore. Which, like, I thought about maybe trying to watch the Mothra films, but I feel like they're going to be the same as these, that I would not be interested at all.
I don't know. Give one a shot and see.
Eventually, after I get done with all the Godzilla films, we'll see what I decided.
That's fair.
Yeah.
What was the next one? Mechagodzilla?
Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla 2.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
I will forget that tomorrow when I go to put it in the show notes. I will have to look it up.
It's fine. It's Godzilla. It's funny because this is the first Mechagodzilla in this era.
But it's a sequel.
But it is Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla 2 because the first Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla was called Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla. And then in the Millennium era, they did Godzilla against Mechagodzilla, so they didn't have to have the number 2 next to it.
Wait, what was the other one with Mothra called? Was it not called Godzilla vs. Mothra?
It was Mothra vs. Godzilla.
Oh, they swapped it.
Yeah, so in the Heisei era, which is 54...
No, that's the Showa era, I thought.
Or the Showa era from 54 to 75. A lot of them were the enemy monster versus Godzilla, because Godzilla was considered the villain throughout most of them. Like, so it's Godzilla, Godzilla Raids Again, King Kong versus Godzilla, Mothra versus Godzilla, Ghidorah the Three-Headed Monster, Invasion of Astro Monster, Ebra Horror of the Deep, Son of Godzilla. Like, a lot of them didn't really have Godzilla in the tag until 71 with Godzilla vs. Ghidorah, and then Gigan, and then Megalon, where Godzilla was first.
Oh, okay.
From that point on, yeah.
Yeah, I never noticed that.
Even in 75, the last one in that era, which was Mechagodzilla 2, it was Terror of Mechagodzilla.
Okay. Huh.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that is probably a show.
Yes, you guys learned some naming conventions of Godzilla through this.
If you'd like to find more of our content, you can head over to www.one-quest.com. You can also help us out by supporting us at patreon.com/onequest. If you can't support us there with dollars, you can go over to your favorite podcast platform like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Amazon Music. Rate us, review us, subscribe to us. All those things help. You can also go to social media, where we are facebook.com/onequestonline or @one_quest on Instagram and Twitter. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/onequestvideo, and you can send us emails to social@one-quest.com. Otherwise, we'll be back next week with something else to talk about. Thanks for listening. Bye.
See you.